Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder.
Why are you whispering?
I'm speaking very quietly, Wendy, because I have reason to believe that Barack Obama is tapping our broadcast.
Don't make me sigh right out of the box, please.
What's my record for making you sigh?
It's been every day for months now.
No, but what's the earliest? Have I ever
this
gotten you in under 15 seconds? I did it. I broke my personal best. Oh, good. That's good news. So stop listening to us, Barack Obama. You're not supposed to be tapping people's broadcasts.
Hey, if it's true, we need to find out about it. I know.
There's
I know. But here's the thing. You know, I believe there's a person who shall be referred to as President Donald Trump who was tweeting things saying fake news, name your sources.
Right.
You just make stuff up and expect people to believe it.
Right.
What? If I may do my Archie Bunker.
You may, sure.
I just don't get this world. This is a dream, isn't it?
No, it would be more of a nightmare than a dream. I mean, same category, but more in the nightmare file. All right. In our last episode on Friday, you were telling Steve and myself and the world, really, that you had an upcoming engagement to see the musical Mamma Mia. And without saying the words, there was some reticence. You were a little.
Can I just tell you, there wasn't. And right. I didn't bring it up. You did.
I did. I sensed that there was a problem. So I wanted to call it up.
There was absolutely no problem. I don't like things hanging over my head, fun or otherwise. I just don't. I don't know.
Not even fun? Like if you know something fun is coming, you still don't want it hanging over your head? Oh, no. 3 more days till fun. Oh, I hate fun.
I got a lot of things in my life that there are a lot of variables. Things can happen, and sometimes I can't always stay true to my plans, so I don't like to make plans. I like to kind of go, hey, today's a good day. Let's go do something fun.
When was the last time on the spur of the moment you just went and saw a Broadway musical like Mamma Mia?
I don't know.
All right.
I went to see Book of Mormon with
just
Michael.
Just on the spur of the moment?
Well, a couple days notice, but this was a month.
That's still hanging over your head time. A couple days.
I know, but then you get to have time. Anyway, regardless, mm-hmm. I did want to go, I'm glad I went.
Mm-hmm. Now that it's over. Right? Now
no,
it's easier.
I want to go back. Put it this way. I didn't want Mamma Mia to end. I didn't.
Really?
It was at the Marriott Lincolnshire. Steve, you were not there holding a welcome sign. I'm very
sold
bummed.
Out. I couldn't get in.
Ran into a couple of listeners.
Told them my name was Fernando.
All right.
There was something in the air that night.
I'll say the world.
First of all, I want to say that I knew nothing about Mamma Mia. I knew it contained ABBA music,
right.
And I love ABBA music, but I didn't know that I never saw the movie. Mm-hmm. I did not know that it was a story that included ABBA music in appropriate parts. I did not know that.
What did you think?
I didn't think anything, and I didn't want to look it up because I kind of wanted to be surprised.
Sure, because as you've established, you love surprises.
For something like that, I do.
Right.
Why are you backing me into a corner?
When I go see
a movie, I don't like to know what it's about. I like to just go see it.
That way, right. I agree with you.
So it was an actual story, which was pretty amazing to me. I need to apologize to the gentleman who sat next to me because I was tapping my foot and rocking the whole time and mouthing every word. Out loud.
How lucky for him to view Mamma Mia in Sensoround. That's so much better.
Well, I got to tell you, I've never been to the Lincolnshire Marriott before. It was a theater in the round. There was no bad seat in the house.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered, where's the backstage? There really isn't one.
Nope.
They run out. They bring furniture onto the stage on these little ramps when it's pitch black. I would be laying there flat if I had to do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just absolutely amazing.
Who brings the furniture out? Furniture movers?
No,
or
the people who dance.
Right.
A lot of dancing going on.
Oh, yeah,
and I got emotional and I cried a little bit into it. I don't really know why. I don't know what's wrong with me.
What happened that made you cry?
Just the beautiful voices and being overwhelmed. I love musicals.
Right.
Except including Julie Andrews.
Right. That's the exception. So you have the combination of singing and dancing and, as you mentioned, people moving furniture. Who could expect you to not cry?
I've
been to Bob's Price with you where you're like a bit, you can't stop crying.
That little cartoon guy makes me cry because he scares me.
Yes.
I'm going to find him.
And doesn't look much like Bob, I'll be honest with you. He's like a much younger version of Bob.
That's mean.
I'm just saying.
I'm scared. I'm going to find little Bob somewhere where he's not supposed to be. In my clothing or
Go
something.
Put little Bob away.
Yeah, he can sneak up your pant leg. I'm very nervous about little Bob.
I hope you heard that, President Barack Obama, if you're tapping the show. And he
I'm
is.
Tapping my foot. Little Bob is crawling up my pants. But all in all, it was amazing. I don't know why I cried. It was just like I got teary. I'm like,
sure.
This is so amazing. I was covered in goosebumps. And the thing that kills me, Bill, is when my son Michael was Judas in Four Nights of Jesus Christ Superstar, I didn't cry once.
But this made you cry.
I know. I don't know what it is.
Probably the Swedish influence of ABBA is what it is.
That's what it is.
I bet it is.
And every single one of their hits was included, including Waterloo, which is one of my favorites.
Yeah. Waterloo was involved.
Knowing me, knowing you. I really had a great time. So if you haven't seen Mamma Mia, Steve, you should go. Make plans a month in advance and go.
Now,
are you
speaking this awesomely of it so that they will include you in the print ads?
No, but they can. I'll give them a quote.
It made me cry. And there was furniture being moved. Wendy Snyder, WGN.
Tell me that is not the best quote.
Formerly afternoons.
This is our last week, isn't it?
That in brackets. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Now, are you going to get emotional over that? Don't.
No, unless you do some singing and dancing and moving up some furniture.
I may surprise you with that. All right, we will take a quick break, and then there's going to be more show. Want to jump in? Why not? We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
This is chilling music, Bill.
Sure is.
I binge-watched the hell out of this thing, Making of a Murderer, and we have one of the two lawyers featured in Making a Murderer, Jerome Buting. We'll call you Jerry. How are you, Jerry? Awesome. We have your new... First of all, thank you for coming in a little early because we have a press conference that's going to run at 10:30. We didn't want to make you wait. Illusion of Justice, Inside Making a Murderer in America's Broken System. I just told you off the air I was one of millions of people that just got sucked into Making a Murderer. It was sad. It was something I didn't know about the justice system, that things could be skewed so much.
Right.
Thank you for coming in.
You're welcome. And I wrote the book not just to talk about the Avery case, but also to talk about some of the themes that we see in Making a Murderer that unfortunately are common across many cases in the criminal justice system.
Now, a lot of people were saying that the documentarians had a mission. What mission would that be other than to show that sometimes the justice system is skewed?
Yeah, I think they were just trying to shine a light on the system and give people a better look at what really goes on inside their courtrooms. You know, there's been complaints that they left out evidence. It was the prosecution's case. They left out defense evidence, too. It was a six-week trial, and they had to make the editorial judgments that they did based on what they thought was important. I think they drew from the party's attorneys what they thought was important by how much time we spent in our closing argument. And the main issues that we fought over for 6 weeks, the blood, the bones, the key, the bullet, those are pretty well covered and covered with both sides in the documentary.
Would you do me a favor, Jerry, for people who have not seen or know about the case, just give kind of a quick outline of what went on there with the Avery case?
Well, Stephen Avery was, at the time, and thankfully still is, the only DNA exoneree who was wrongly convicted. In his case, spent 18 years in prison before DNA exonerated him. The only exoneree who has then later been charged with a serious crime and convicted of murder. While he was out for 2 years, he filed a lawsuit against the county that prosecuted him in the wrongful conviction. And then suddenly this woman ends up missing, who he had an appointment with that day, who was a photographer, Teresa Halbach, and he then gets charged with her homicide, and it turns out that a good deal of the evidence used against him was actually found, I use that in quotes, by the very same sheriff's department that he was suing.
She worked for Auto Trader, correct?
Yes.
And then she was scheduled to go and take pictures of a vehicle he was selling.
They had a bunch of vehicles on their farm.
Correct.
Yeah.
And yes, she was taking photographs. And, you know, obviously you would think the way it's shown is that the police department would have an axe to grind against Stephen Avery because they wrongfully convicted him before.
Right, and he was. It wasn't just the money that he was trying to get from the county, but also the embarrassment. These officers, were going to and were in the process of being very deeply embarrassed by what he was exposing happened in his first case. But so from the very beginning, it was very suspicious to me when I took over the case that they had done very little investigation of the usual suspects that you find whenever a woman is found murdered. 90-some percent of the time, it's the circle of men in her life, whether it's a husband, ex-husband, boyfriend, ex-boyfriend, roommates, colleagues, co-workers, those kinds of things. And so little investigation was done of those suspects, and instead it was laser focused on Stephen Avery.
So, as you just pointed out, only 10% of the time is it an outside source. It's almost always somebody that woman has a knowledge of in some way, shape, or form, a friend, a roommate, a neighbor. That's what normally is.
That's typically the case,
yes. How about
that?
Wow.
All right. Dean Strang was your partner in this.
Yes.
Were you a little jealous that he was getting all the attention from the women?
No,
his fan club.
He deserved every bit of it. I had a few of my supporters, too.
Yes, you did.
I think he outnumbered me.
You said that there were themes that go on in other cases. What was it about this Avery case that makes it so interesting to anybody who knows it?
Well, one of the most tragic things, the thing that I hear most from people who watch the documentary, is what happened to the 16-year-old Brendan Dassey mental limitations and the kinds of techniques that were used to interview him. And sadly, those happen all the time.
They coerced a confession from him, right?
They did.
Yeah. I was telling
yes.
Bill off the air, he hasn't gotten to that part of it yet, where Brendan Dassey was taken out of school and being questioned with no one, no parent, no one else around.
No lawyer.
Nothing.
Right.
Yeah. And, here's a kid who has some developmental issues, and you could clearly see that when he kind of just was trying to agree with them the way they approached him. He's a kid who just wants to kind of go, okay, yeah, that's how it happened. Listen, am I going to be finished in time to get back to school because I have a test today? That broke my heart.
Yeah, that was one of the most obvious points when he clearly had no idea what he was doing. If he thought, are we going to be done soon so I can go back to my class? I've got a project to turn in. And again, sadly, this happens frequently because of the techniques of interrogation that American law enforcement largely uses. We're now the only country, really, in the English-speaking world that still uses some of these antiquated techniques, and they involve lying to suspects, telling them that they have evidence when they don't, pretending to be a false friend. At one point, one of the detectives in Brendan's case says, we're police officers, but not right now. I'm really a father with a boy about your age, and I'm here to help you, and we'll go to bat for you, and nothing's going to happen to you, and don't worry about what's going to happen to you. And all these techniques that ultimately, and then they start feeding facts to him with suggestive and leading questions.
Yeah.
We know people falsely confess. A lot of people still have a hard time understanding. They say, hey, I would never falsely confess. Why would this guy do it?
When you're in that position, I can't guarantee I wouldn't do it.
Well, and of the DNA exonerations, approximately 25% of the time, those people falsely confessed when we know they didn't do it. They were excluded by DNA. So it happens, and it, in my opinion, it has a higher incidence of happening when there are young people, inexperienced or vulnerable adults who have these particular techniques applied to them.
Are we within our rights to plead the Fifth Amendment and upon being questioned just not respond without an attorney present? We have that right, don't we?
Absolutely. But too often people are made to feel like that's an indication they're guilty.
Oh.
Right.
That only guilty people are the ones who should plead the Fifth or remain silent. And in fact, somebody who's truly innocent has probably the most to lose and the most to risk,
mm-hmm.
because they may think that the police are being objective and unbiased and on their side, but one of the techniques that they use is essentially the first part of the interview, the police detective is supposed to be like a human lie detector and make his or her own conclusion about whether the suspect is telling the truth. If that person, that detective decides that the person's lying, then it goes into a whole nother phase where they do not accept your denial no matter how long you do it, where they lie, they can present all of these deceptive tricks against you. And studies have shown that police officers are no better than anybody else at telling a lie from a truth.
Yeah.
After watching that particular episode where Brendan Dassey was being asked by authorities about his involvement in the murder, after watching that, I have two teenage boys, and I said to them, if you're ever brought into a principal's office, if you are ever approached by a police officer or brought into the station, be 100% respectful, but say, I just don't feel comfortable talking about this without my mom or dad here. And they can do that. That is their right, and that's not being rude, as long as they're, I'm sorry, officer, I just don't feel comfortable talking about this till one of my parents arrives. That's what I told them. I hope that was good advice.
That is good advice, and in part of it's education and public education that, we need to do with our young people. But there's some other things that can be done, and Illinois has taken some early steps in that. Illinois is the first state in the country that now has passed a law that if you are under the age of 15, you cannot be interrogated without a lawyer present, and it can't be waived by that young person. They've also now required something that every state should require, which is mandatory recording of all custodial interrogations from beginning to end of anybody under the age 18 charged with felonies. There are some other limitations on the under 15 part of it. The advocate's trying to get it to 17, but there was a compromise, and it's a first step. That's one of the things that's one of the ironies here is that it was only 6 months before Brendan Dassey's interrogation came out that Wisconsin changed the law mm-hmm. to require those to be videotaped or electronically recorded. That's the only reason we really see what happened in his interrogation, because before that time, and still in many states that don't require them to be videotaped or recorded, detectives will come into court and they will testify. In Brendan's case, it would have been much like Ken Kratz's press conference, where they gave this story and made it sound like this kid was just gave this long narrative, unburdening himself with the guilt he'd been carrying for months, and that it was a coherent story. And we know that wasn't the case. When you actually look at what was said by Brendan, these long pauses, the almost, one or two word responses, the fumbling around, the inconsistencies, all of that stuff is recorded. And it should be, because if we're asking judges and juries to make these kinds of decisions about who's telling the truth or whether a statement was voluntary or coerced, why not give them the best evidence? And that is a videotape recording from beginning to end with no breaks.
Does that include, you said sometimes the police will say something like, I'm not speaking as a police officer, I'm speaking as a father. They have to also tape those incidents or not?
That's right. If the person is in custody, that is not free to leave, in that kind of a setting, they have to record everything.
Which is good. Jerry Buting has written a book, Illusion of Justice, Inside Making a Murderer and America's Broken System. He will be appearing tonight, 7 p.m., Anderson's Bookshop. And
Community Christian Church.
Community Christian Church, that's in Naperville. And you're somewhere today at noon as well.
At the Union League of Chicago.
Okay, we are going to take a break. I believe we might have a press conference. If you're good to stick around, we can continue this. Illusion of Justice, Jerry Buting in the studio with us. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and Jerry Buting is with us. The book is called Illusion of Justice, Inside Making a Murderer. If you watch that Netflix original series, you know exactly who Jerry is, and he's going to be at the Union League Club of Chicago at 11:30 a.m. this morning, and out in Naperville at the Community Christian Church through Anderson's Bookshop tonight at 7. Jerry, this is the weirdest interview. We started it, we did a press conference in the middle of it, and now we're back to it. I just want to mention, I feel horrible that Teresa Halbach died. I feel bad that her family was kind of dragged through this when the Netflix documentary came out. But I want to say that you and Dean Strang, I could see the pain that you wanted the truth to come out. And you had a lot of turmoil while working on this case, didn't you?
We did. There's no question. And When we took the case, we knew it was going to be difficult, but by the end, we thought that we had shown more than enough reasonable doubt for a not guilty verdict, and so it was very difficult to get over the loss, knowing that your client is going to prison for the rest of his life unless something changes.
And Brandon Dassey, his conviction was overturned. What's the fate of that now?
Brandon's conviction was overturned by a federal court based in Milwaukee, Eastern District of Wisconsin. But then the state appealed to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, which is based here in Chicago. They had oral argument just a couple of weeks ago on Valentine's Day, a three-judge panel, and it normally still takes a number of months before a decision comes down. Meanwhile, Brendan sits in prison. Stephen, meanwhile, has a new attorney, Kathleen Zellner, also based here in Chicago, and she is doing some testing on some of the physical evidence from the scene and in the hopes that she can determine newly discovered evidence that would allow her to file a motion for a new trial or she's even hoping that she could actually prove who the real perpetrator is.
That's the bottom line here, is to find out who really killed Teresa Halbach, isn't it?
It is. It does neither the Halbachs nor any victim in a case any good to have the wrong person sitting in prison while the real killer is out free. And that happens. And that's the other side of any wrongful conviction, is that it means the real perpetrator goes free. And the best example is in Stephen Avery's first wrongful conviction. The man who did commit that rape, because he wasn't arrested and prosecuted in the case that Stephen Avery was convicted of, he went off and raped at least one other woman. He was a suspect in a homicide in North Carolina. So, justice requires the truth, and people shouldn't be afraid of what it takes to get to that truth, even if it takes many years and if it means reopening some wounds of the victim's family as well.
You said to Wendy and I off mic, don't despair. Things are looking up. Things are getting better. Explain why.
Yeah, and I talk about this in the book towards the end. There's some suggestions and ideas that we can all do. We need to take more ownership on what happens in our own criminal justice system. It's not just Manitowoc County, some distant county, where these kinds of things happen. They happen everywhere. They happen all over the world. Dean and I have spoken to audiences in Europe, and we hear the same thing there. Partly in America, though, we have at least the right to, first of all, in a lot of states, you elect judges. In every state, you elect sheriffs and prosecutors. And those elections happen, though, in off-cycle elections where very few people turn out, 15 to 20%. And so what happens is most of the time they're unopposed. It's the same old people that keep winning. And then they sort of handpick their successors, and it goes on and on and on like that. But if people stand up and say, we don't want to do business the way we've been doing it before, they can make a difference. It just happened here in Chicago and in Cleveland and in Jacksonville, where the voters voted out of office longtime prosecutors. Who had run on the platform of, let's lock them up, throw away the key, the clanging cell doors in their TV commercials. And people said, we don't want to do it that way anymore. We want to be smart on crime. So people can make a difference at the ballot box if they really vote. The other thing is jury duty. Most people get this jury summons and they think it's like a root canal. It's the last thing they want to do.
Except for me, who got a summons, and then they canceled all the court sessions that day, and I got dismissed. I really wanted to be a juror.
Well, that happens sometimes, too, but your being down there may have made a difference in a case getting resolved. Sometimes cases get resolved on the day of trial. Both sides become more reasonable, perhaps. Mm-hmm.
But it's a good thing to do.
It is a good thing. It's your civic duty. It's the only chance you can actually participate directly in the judicial branch. Mm-hmm. But you also keep in mind that you're not going to be necessarily a good juror on every single case. Let's say you have something in your a close family member or friend who was sexually assaulted, and you can't really put aside what you know about what happened in that case to be fair in others. Then you're doing your duty by telling the judge and the lawyers that, and you may very well be a perfect juror in some other kind of a case. But people do need to be willing to step up to the plate and serve as jurors, because it's a fundamental part of our whole system.
Good luck with the book, Illusion of Justice, Inside Making a Murderer and America's Broken System. This book will give us hope. hopefully. Jerry Buting, you can follow him on Twitter. It's at J Buting.
Yes.
Correct? I just followed you. And you can see him at the Union League Club of Chicago, like in a half an hour this morning. And tonight, 7 p.m., Community Christian Church through Anderson's Bookshop. Continued success and good
Thank
luck.
You
what are you working on next?
I'm still a practicing lawyer, so I still have cases. And, I'm also trying to talk to as many people as I can and keep public awareness about what's going on in our criminal justice system.
Absolutely.
Good
Thanks,
luck,
Jerry.
To you.
Appreciate it. A quick break, some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy. And if you want to jump in, why don't you dial us up at 312-981-7200. You can call us there or text us there. That's up to you. I'm not
Jump
telling
in.
You what to do. Jump in.
The water's fine.
Oh, it's nice.
Oh, there was a bubble. Bill.
Yeah, that's not me. It's a whirlpool.
With one bubble?
Yeah. I didn't say it was a good whirlpool. It's a very inexpensive whirlpool. You know what's upsetting, Wendy? Can I tell you what's upsetting?
Talk to me, Bill.
We found out about a week ago, they're remaking Beauty and the Beast. Disney is brilliant in terms of this. Disney will have a hit movie, and if the movie's animated, they make a live-action version of it. And if it's live-action, they make an animated version of it. That way you see it twice, kind of.
I don't like that.
Brilliant.
Though. You really think that is?
Yeah. From a financial standpoint,
I guess, yeah.
It is. And I have to say, in many of these productions, it's just as good, if not better. Now, Beauty and the Beast, the animated version, was out, what would you say, 20 years ago?
I never
About
saw
20.
It.
You never saw Beauty and
I
the Beast?
I have boys, although they've seen it, so yeah. Riddle me that. I probably at daycare they saw it.
Oh, maybe. I think you'd enjoy it. It's really good. It's got a singing cup and a candlestick. It's fun.
Sold.
A lot of times before I go to see a movie, I'll say to the guy in the theater, does this movie have a singing cup? And if the answer is no, I go elsewhere. I don't need to see that. Well, all right. So Beauty and the Beast came out about 20 years ago. I don't know. And now there's a live action version with that Emma Watson from Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
She plays Hermione Gingold in it. All right. We found out about a week ago that one of the characters in the movie is the first openly gay Disney character in a film. Now, there have been other gay characters in Disney
movies.
But not
openly.
Not openly gay. More closeted gay characters. But Disney is a very gay-friendly company, and they've thrown in a couple of characters who may have been gay. But also remember, they're cartoons. So a lot of times, they will not be engaging in sexual relations because they're animated. Although you can be animated during sex. I'm not saying you can't.
Bill, I don't want to see cartoons. That would make me uncomfortable. I can't even watch animals do it.
Not even Daphne from Scooby-Doo? Come on.
No.
Think about it.
I'm a girl. Do you forget I'm a girl sometimes?
I always forget. Jeez. Despite all the memos you send me, I always forget.
My pink memos?
Yes.
Yours are blue. Mine are pink.
Right. That's the way it should be. All right. Well, now, all right. So like I said, the live action version of Beauty and the Beast is about to hit theaters, but there's a theater in Alabama that refuses to show the movie because one of the characters is gay.
Again, this is where I'm going to sigh because I'm going to say, what year is this? But then there are several occasions where I say, what year is this?
Right.
Who
that
cares?
Comes up a lot now. Who cares, right? Who cares?
If it's not up your alley or you don't want to explain it to your kids, then don't take them to see the movie.
Right. Kids are going to realize at some point that there are straight people and gay people and otherwise.
I'll bet you they've already figured it out, unbeknownst to the parents.
I bet they have. And I know a lot of people go, well, if they see a gay character, it'll turn them gay.
Yeah, right. That'll do it.
They'll sit in the theater and they'll see a gay character and then magically they will become gay. Wouldn't that be horrible? Because that's how it happens. You know, they throw a gay character in a movie and the audience, a lot of them, if they're sitting up close, will become gay. You know that, Wendy. That's a fact. That's a proven fact.
Do you know some people probably believe that?
Maybe.
A select few probably believe that. Again, if you don't agree with it, that's your own personal opinion.
Right.
Then don't go see the movie.
Agreed. Disney's new live-action musical version of Beauty and the Beast, this is according to CNN, will not be a guest of the drive-in theater in Alabama because of the new gay twist within the movie. It is with great sorrow that I have to tell our customers that we will not be showing Beauty and the Beast, read a message on the Facebook page of the Henninger Drive-In in the northwest portion of the state of Alabama. The message was removed Friday morning, but CNN affiliate WHNT in Huntsville, Alabama, still has it. They show a picture of it. I'll hold it up to the mic.
Oh, that's good.
CNN's attempt to reach the theater owners were unsuccessful. Director Bill Condon says the character of LeFou, sidekick to the villainous Gaston, has an extremely gay moment in the PG-rated movie, although what that means is unclear. Now, keep in mind, they may or may not have seen the movie. A lot of times they'll screen the movie for exhibitors in advance so that they can make the decision whether or not to show the movie. So something about this extremely gay moment did not sit well with Bill Condon. The New York Times News calls LeFou Disney's first unambiguously gay character in its rave review of the film. Variety's reviewer says that LeFou is silly and fawning, but I must have missed the memo where that spells gay. Condon tells the British gay magazine Altitude, LeFou is somebody who on one day wants to be Gaston and another day wants to kiss Gaston. He's confused about what he wants. It's somebody who's just realizing that he has these feelings. The movie has not opened yet, but it seems from the Facebook post that the Henninger Drive-In owners have not seen it. If we can take our 11-year-old granddaughter and our 8-year-old grandson to see a movie, then we have no business watching, the message says. If I can't sit through a movie with God or Jesus sitting by me, then we have no business showing it.
Does he have to buy a ticket?
Oh, it doesn't say. It does not say.
Does God or Jesus get a freebie?
It also doesn't. There's no mention of that whatsoever. We are first and foremost Christians, it goes on to say.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Hi. Did you say hi?
Kim is talking to Joey, I guess, but I'm hearing Kim Gordon in my ear.
Right.
Hi, Kim. She's my guy.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Kim.
I meant to talk to Joey. Sorry.
That's all right. You call anytime.
I'll be back.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
We will not compromise what the Bible teaches us. We will continue to show family-oriented films so you can feel free to come watch wholesome movies without worrying about sex, nudity, homosexuality, and foul language, the memo continues. Now, don't you have the option, because you've seen it, there's a bunch of movie theaters, several of them showing different films, so it's up to you to decide which movie to see and not see. Why would a theater decide for everyone in a town, no one should be subjected to this? We got a character that wants to kiss another character. That's going to ruin things. We're not showing this movie.
Again, if everybody would just keep their yaps shut and they just chose not to have that movie, then we wouldn't know about the story. It would just be, it's not being shown at this theater. You'd go, oh, I'll go someplace else.
Right.
But, you know, people who disagree with things want to be vocal about it.
When your kids were younger, because they cite in here, this family, the Condons, have an 11-year-old granddaughter and an 8-year-old grandson. Would you have been reluctant at all to see this movie when your kids were 8 and 11? Would you have said, I can't take my kids to see this. There's a character that wants to kiss a guy. I can't show them this. You wouldn't have thought of that, would you?
Really, you're asking me that question.
I already know the answer.
One of my kids was at daycare in a home setting, yeah. And one of the kids had two dads.
Yeah.
And Dylan was like, just so matter-of-factly. He was really little, but he went there for a few years.
Yep.
And it's like, so-and-so's mommy and daddy are coming, so-and-so's dads are coming. And just it was just, that's how it was.
Isn't it amazing how just one generation after
right. Us,
kids are so accepting of it. Now, I would imagine if their parents show some bias towards it, it's going to be more difficult. Not impossible, but difficult for them to see it reasonably.
But here's the thing. It was gay people were around long before, but didn't come out.
Right.
So people weren't as aware of it.
Right.
Now it's like it's out there. And so what?
Right.
You
I
know
agree.
What? I have blonde hair. You don't.
Right.
I mean, everybody's different.
Yeah. Now, I would not take my kids to see a movie where somebody had blonde hair.
No, Owen Wilson movies.
No Owen Wilson movies for the kids.
Why and not? Why wouldn't you come to see my movie? That was the worst Owen Wilson ever.
Possibly.
At least I try, Bill.
Do one more.
No, I'm not going to do it.
That's great. we were going to see Legally Blonde, and right as we were walking to the theater, I said to myself, this is a trap.
You said Illegally Blonde.
Illegally
snap.
Blonde. Yeah.
I just, some of these stories, I think you're, it's like I'm living in Mad Magazine all of
a
sudden.
No, it's real life. It's not just this theater in Alabama. I heard other people are, they're protesting the movie. You're going to see protests because there's a scene where there's a character who is gay and has a crush on his boss. So that's going to, it's making people protest the movie.
You're hetero, yet you have a crush on your boss.
Sure do. He's handsome as all get out.
He's pretty handsome.
What can I do? All right, we'll take a quick break. Would you like to discuss this with us? We're at 312-981-7200. Give us a call or a text. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Do millennials need a class to learn how to become adults?
Who, me?
Yeah, you. Plus, the countdown to Mexico begins.
And the wall just got 10 feet taller, believe me.
Could you just wait a couple of weeks?
Rokan with Anna DeVlantis. Chicago's conversation is on 720 WGN.
Are you embarrassed by your smile? Are you holding on to the few teeth you have left because you can't stand the thought of wearing dentures? Or do you wear dentures and wish you had permanent attached teeth? Here's unbelievable news. Now you can smile with confidence. Oramax Oral Surgery is a state-of-the-art practice that specializes in an innovative surgical procedure that can give you permanent teeth, all while you sleep in just one day. Imagine going to sleep with decayed, loose teeth and waking up a few hours later with a beautiful custom-made smile. Why live with ugly teeth? Why wear dentures when you can have new permanent teeth in just one day? Give us a call and find out if you're a candidate for this unique teeth-in-one-day procedure. Financing options are available. The next 25 callers will receive a free exam and three-dimensional CT scan, a $500 value. Find out if you're a candidate for dental implants today. Call 866-2-ORAMAX. 866-2-ORAMAX. That's 866-267-2629. Certain restrictions apply.
So, how's the pickled salmon pate?
Kind of chewy.
Oh, too bad. Hey, how's the factory expansion coming?
Oh, I got some good news there. I passed the first bank loan committee.
Great.
And a new loan officer, and now it's in the middle of the second committee, after which it goes to Geneva.
Illinois?
No, Switzerland.
You know, you need to bank with First American Bank.
First American?
Yeah, with the funny grandma radio spots.
Oh, right.
They're a $3.5 billion bank.
Wow.
They have all the commercial lending capabilities, like ESOP financing, SBA guaranteed credit lines for foreign receivables, real estate financing, and outstanding wealth management service.
That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. First American is the largest privately owned bank in Illinois. You get answers fast.
Well, after I get through committees 2, 3, and 4...
Then you're done.
No. Then it goes to the subcommittee under the committee that's in charge of all the committees. Oh, boy.
Say that again.
Oh, boy.
First American, the bank that does more for your money. Visit firstambank.com. Call 847-952-3700. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Do you have bags and puffiness under your eyes, Bill? I'm not asking you because you really don't.
I don't.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
But if you are listening right now and you do, everybody's been asking when Chamonix is going to have a great deal on Genucel. It is happening now. Genucel is back with a great discount. What is Genucel? A luxurious treatment with plant stem cells and anti-aging peptides. That target the bags and puffiness under your eyes. But something new is waiting for you when you order Genucel today. You'll get a $50 instant coupon for additional savings on your order. Then Chamonix will add to your order Esotique XV. This stuff is great as well. It's Chamonix's anti-aging, collagen-building, moisturizing cream, and they're going to throw in Genucel Immediate Effects as a second free gift. I can't talk today. I feel
free
like I'm
gift,
still on the weekend. Yes.
All right.
But see, you get three gifts in all, so that's where I get confused.
Sure.
With this deal, today's $50 instant coupon, you can indulge in a 2-month supply of three amazing Chamonix products for much less than you'd pay in department or drugstores. And this stuff really works. Call 800-577-8623. You can go to their website, genucel.com, GENUCEL.com. Order Genucel now. You'll get two free gifts, a $50 instant coupon while supplies last. Call today 800-577-8623 or go to
genucel.com. She's real. She's Chicago. She's Robin Baumgarten. Watch Robin and the rest of the WGN Morning News team weekdays 4 to 10 on Chicago's very own WGN TV.
Present your dinner. Be our guest. Be our guest. Put our service to the
Oh, Jerry Arbach. We miss you.
I love musicals.
Sure, I know.
I'm crying.
Don't cry. It's all right. Oh, people are upset, Wendy. People are very upset. There's a new version of Beauty and the Beast in which one of the characters is openly gay. They're not upset that a very pretty girl wants to have a relationship with a man who looks like he's part water buffalo. They're fine with that. It's the gay character that's got people all upset. It's Disney's first openly gay character. LeFou is his name. They've had other gay characters in the past. Mr. Smee and Peter Pan, Ursula and Little Mermaid. I think Pumbaa and Timon in Lion King. I'm almost positive. It's not the first time. People are very upset.
Do you do cartoon reviews? Because if not, you should.
I do. I absolutely do. So there's a theater in Alabama that will not show the movie because it's just too upsetting to show that. They can't show it. And other people are protesting the film. It hasn't even come out yet.
Well, times have changed, and everybody should mind their own business. That's how I feel. If you don't want to go to the movie, that's totally fine, but then just don't go to the movie.
Right.
I believe this is Grandma Titi on the line.
Oh!
Hi, Grandma Titi.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're fine. How are you, Grandma Titi?
I'm doing real good. I have to tell you, you guys, listening to you guys in the morning is such an uplifting moment for me. You make me laugh.
Thank you. You're very kind. Thank you.
You make me smile. It's kind of like listening to Stephen Colbert at 10:30 at night.
Oh.
Before I go to sleep, I get a good laugh. When I get up, I get a good laugh.
Thanks.
Wow.
That's very high praise. Thank you.
Thank you much.
Yeah. So anyway, I got to tell you a quick little story.
Mm-hmm.
Out to dinner with my 18-year-old grandson, his buddy. They're both seniors in high school. They've been buds for forever. These kids are in and out of my house like a revolving door.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting across the table from me with my daughter. My daughter's on one side. And I'm looking at him, and I'm kind of laughing. And all of a sudden, my grandson says, "What are you laughing at, Tiki?" I said, "Have you seen this story going around on Facebook about the little boy that wanted the haircut just like his buddies because he wanted to go to school on Monday and fool his teacher that so she would not be able to tell them apart?"
Right.
Okay, and that's about a little white boy and a little black boy. And it's true. I mean, they showed the whole thing on video. It was absolutely
Those kids
terrible.
Don't see color. They think if they get their hair cut similarly, no one will be able to tell them apart.
So anyway, I'm sitting across the table, and I'm laughing about that story. And Luke's like, "Oh, yeah, I saw that. And, you know, everybody's laughing at how cute that was. And because, I mean, as you can probably understand, my grandson was sitting with his buddy, who's black.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I was laughing about, I said, you know, people are not going to be able to tell you apart because you got the same earrings on. So,
right.
So then we started talking about movies, and I said, speaking of movies, your mom and I have been watching a great piece of history on TV that, you know, might be a good thing for you guys to think about watching to get a handle on the history of, you know, gay rights. I said, because you guys are growing up in a day and
oh, no. We
Did
just have
we
one
lose
tea.
Grandma T. Are we down to one T?
Yes.
Oh, there we are. Okay. So,
oh, I'm sorry.
That's right.
Did you miss me?
Yeah. So what ended up happening there?
So anyway, I'm sitting there trying to explain to them, and my daughter looks at me in astonishment that I would suggest these two boys watch this series that's on TV.
Yeah.
And I look at her and I'm like, what's wrong with you?
Right. You got to know your history.
Well, please. You know, I live in a divided household. I really do.
A lot of people do.
Oh, my God.
A lot of people do.
So I'm thinking to myself, well, finally my daughter has gotten a little bit of history and she's not going to be so, you know, uptight about all this stuff. But she did not like the fact that I suggested to my grandson that he and his buddy watch that TV
show. Oh, that's unfortunate. Aww. That's unfortunate. Grandma Titi, always fun to talk to you. Thank you so much. Have
Love
a great
you guys.
Day.
Bye.
Thank you.
Can I just quickly read you a very fast text?
Yes.
My mother-in-law used to tell my sister-in-law not to watch The Ellen DeGeneres Show because she said that watching it would make her gay. I'm not joking. After 27 years in a married relationship with two grown children, my sister-in-law came out of the closet that she is bisexual, and I truly believe that my mother-in-law blames Ellen DeGeneres for this.
See, I already just sighed again. I'm really sick of sighing, but I just don't understand this. And I just want it to be known that if you're so blatantly against gay people and maybe your niece or your nephew or your kid all of a sudden wants to tell you that they are in fact gay.
Yes.
They won't tell you because they know what your reaction's going to be.
Right.
And with teen suicide rates up, I just everybody should just accept everybody for what they are.
Right.
If you don't agree with it, don't partake in it, but just let's accept each other.
But watching a movie or a TV show probably will not turn you gay. Probably.
They don't know for a fact.
I watched Walking Dead last night. Have I bit a single coworker?
Just your wife, you said.
I have bit her. All right, that's a bad example. That's a terrible example. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then the news, and then Eric Zorn stops by. Our friend Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune, so stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
That we do.
We have to. Why wouldn't we? Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. He comes by every Monday. And a lot of times we'll take a look at something Donald Trump has said or done. But really, this week, Eric, I don't know. You'd have to really look far and wide.
Let's go back to last Tuesday.
What happened?
Last Tuesday, he gave a speech. He read a speech without straying from the teleprompter too much. And the media swooned.
Yeah.
You know, Van Jones, some of my most reliable liberal commentators were like, he is now presidential. That was a
presidential
speech.
Was he the one
speech.
That said that's the moment that he became the president?
He was one of them who said that. Chris Wallace said it, too. There was a great, sigh of relief from, I think, from all sides. His polling on that speech was 60, 70, 80% thought it was good. I mean, it depends on how you ask the question, but just about everybody watched it said, well, that looks like a speech that a president would give.
He did a good job.
In a sense, he did. There's no question about it.
But shouldn't we, Wendy and I were discussing it the day after it happened, don't we assume that whoever is elected the president of the United States should and will sound presidential?
You would think that someone who is elected to that job would be able to accomplish the bare minimum of going into Congress and reading a speech and not,
going. It's a given.
It's a given. On the other hand, this is what we've been looking for him, from him for a long time, right? We've been looking for him to grow into the job to become presidential. And there was a lot of talk that night and the next morning on the talk shows that this was a turning point for Trump, that he was pivoting. We keep hearing
sure seemed pivoting. Like it.
And then Saturday morning, unbelievable. I mean, he had
my sigh again.
The Sunday morning talk shows should have been about this was a turnaround week for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Should have been, he is. Last week he did the speech,
mm-hmm.
and then this coming week they're going to be floating their budgetary plans. They're going to be bringing up their Obamacare replacement ideas.
Right.
This is supposed to be a very presidential time for him. Saturday morning, I don't know how much you've talked about this already this morning, but he comes out with a series of tweets that's basically spreading this rumor that was published on Breitbart that President Obama was tapping Donald Trump's phones during the campaign, which is a completely outrageous allegation. And the thing about it that's interesting to me is you've got sort of three possibilities, right? You get the possibility that President Obama was going around the courts and wiretapping phones in Trump Tower to benefit Hillary Clinton's campaign,
mm-hmm.
which is scandalous, felonious,
ludicrous.
Really, lock
as
him
Mike
up.
Tyson
if Obama did that, lock him up. I mean, that is completely beyond the pale. Of course, there's no evidence at all that happened. That being one possibility. The other possibility is that Trump just completely made this up. That he based on rumors, speculation on right wing talk radio and in Breitbart, mm-hmm. places like that. He's just throwing it out there. But he's accusing Obama of this terrible crime. He's accusing him of a felony.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for a president of the United States to accuse a former president of committing a felony, that's a huge story. That's a huge blunder, huge mistake, terrible thing. And the third possibility, which kind of threads the needle a little bit, which is that the Justice Department under Obama went to the courts and got an order, judicial order, forced just such a wiretap because there was enough evidence that there was probable cause to tap these phones because of the context with Russia.
Mm-hmm.
That's also pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, none of these are at all good. There's no like, well, this is no big deal. All three of those possibilities, the only three, are really big deals. Now, what Trump may not know is that the president of the United States can't wiretap anybody. He can't order a wiretap.
I've heard several unless people
he's got,
say that.
Unless he's got some shadow government going on, he's got to go through a judge. His Justice Department's got to go through a judge. The FBI, whatever, they've got to present evidence and say, look, this is why we think this is warranted, because they can't just go throwing wiretaps up
since Watergate
on American citizens. Forever. Ben Rhodes, one of Obama's top people, said, tweeted something like, "No, President Obama, we can't do. Presidents can't order wiretaps. We have that rule in place to protect the people from people like you."
Yeah.
Essentially,
yeah.
That's why presidents can't do this. So if there is that judicial order, then there's going to be some memoranda, some probable cause memoranda, some arguments that are classified now. But the president, one power a president does have is he's got the power unilaterally to lift these kinds of classifications. So Trump could bring that out forward tomorrow. He'd say, like, here are the documents. Look what his Justice Department did. FBI had James Comey, who's been in the news for other reasons during this last year.
Yeah.
He has reportedly come out and demanded that the Justice Department say, no, this didn't happen. We didn't. The FBI did not ask for these. The FBI has nothing to do with this. We're not doing this. So you have a situation where, and one of the things I've been saying to people is, I wish that Donald Trump were a drinker. Because that would explain
blame
some
of that.
You could say,
yeah,
well, he needs to recover from this. He's not a drinker. He is a complete teetotaler. So there's that explanation. You can't float that explanation. He gets up at 6 in the morning. Now, his daughter and son-in-law are Orthodox Jews.
Yeah.
And
which I didn't know Ivanka converted.
I didn't either.
So they, sundown Friday to sundown Saturday, they're on the Sabbath. And I'm not exactly sure what they do, but they're not involved with him at all.
He's on his own?
He's kind of on his own. And so it's like...
dangerous time.
Yeah. And I think it was Peter Sagal maybe tweeted something like that. That Steve Bannon waits for sundown on Friday the way Dracula waits for midnight. It's like, yes, my opportunity. So you have this situation where he seems to go unhinged on Saturdays. And I've got to say, those tweets, that series of tweets, there were three tweets about Obama. He called him a bad man or a sick man for doing this. And then his fourth tweet was about Arnold Schwarzenegger's bad ratings.
Right, that he was fired. He didn't step down.
Does he do this Saturday morning to give SNL some fodder, some material?
It's possible.
Is he trying to, hold the strings and say,
it is the same network as
I saw a writing credit on SNL for Donald Trump, so it's possible. What about this? With other stories in the news, like Russia or like Mike Pence also using
I said even Bill Left doesn't use an AOL.
No, of course not. I've even advanced since that.
Mike Pence still pay for AOL? That's all I want to know.
He still gets the little CD-ROMs at the bookstore.
You've got mail.
All right, so with those stories in place, in Donald Trump's head, does he say, well, I'll create something of a diversion.
I'll
set something up so that people aren't talking about Mike Pence and the emails, or they're not talking about Russia. Is it possible that's his chess move?
It's possible. I don't think that he is that strategic. These things come out so early in the morning, and they're like got typos in them, and
spell tap, T-A-P-P?
TV, he does like the extra P, so maybe we'll
that's what Russia says anyway.
So maybe it wasn't a typo. I'm sorry. That's wrong for a family audience.
Decorum. Come on.
Decorum, I know.
Come on.
I'll straighten up. Well, when we actually go on the air.
We'll clean it up then. All right. There's people that want to talk to us about just this same subject. We're at 312-981-7200. Call us there. Text us there. We'll get to that next. It's Bill and Wendy, along with Eric Zorn of the Tribune on WGN.
We're chatting with Zorn, Zorn, Zorn.
We sing the praises of Zorn.
Praise Zorn.
We do. All right. A lot of people want to check in on exactly what Donald Trump has been up to this week. We're at 312-981-7200 if you have a question or a comment.
Let's talk to Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What are your thoughts on this, Sarah?
Oh, my God. I'll just start swearing if I
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
Right. No, I won't. I'll be polite.
All right.
But I'm just curious. Can President Obama, could he sue this clown? Because it seems like the only way that you get through to this moron, and that's being polite, is if you sue him, if you hit him.
So defamation of character are you alluding to?
Right. I think that's what it is. It's defamation of character. He just comes out and he just makes up all these lies. You know, crowd size, his hand size, you know, electoral size, everything.
Yeah.
And well, size matters, Sarah.
Yeah, size matters, yeah.
Well, sure. I mean, the short answer to your question is...
This guy's a mental case.
The short, you know, Brett Stevens of the Wall Street Journal, a conservative columnist at a conservative paper, tweeted out the other day, like, when is the Republican Party going to come to terms with the fact that the president is mentally ill?
Right.
I think that goes a little far, but that's the Wall Street Journal for you. You know, just way out there with their liberal theories.
Yeah.
Sarah, the short answer to your question is yes. You can sue anybody for anything. The question is whether you can prevail. I don't know that you would be able to prevail in this for defamation. I know about Obama. Obama is too cool to do this.
I know he's such a classy guy. I just you know what those conservatives remind me of.
Careful.
It's like Scientology. It's like a cult. You can't say anything about them, or you know, you're erratic, or you're still ill, mad that Hillary didn't win. I'm not mad that Hillary didn't win. I'm mad that Trump, this imbecile. There's one thing he ever did right in his life. He hired a proper tax accountant to save him $1 billion out of his casinos. And that's it. Everything else has been a blunder.
Well, it is interesting what you talk about, which is that I think Republicans are breaking ranks a little bit. Certainly, Ben Sasse, who's the Republican senator from Nebraska, has been really questioning what was Trump has been tweeting. Lindsey Graham has been critical.
Right, but
John McCain has been.
Who is it from Utah? Chaffetz or whatever? I mean, he had every investigation going, and supposedly he's still investigating the Clintons or whatever. He was on CBS Morning News, and he's like, well, maybe, you know, you ought to be careful when you go around the corner because you really don't know what's there. Like, trying to split hair saying, well, Trump could be right. Trump could pick up the phone right now, call Intel, and show us the documentation of any recordings anywhere. You know why he won't do it? You know why him and Republicans are hiding today? Because Trump is a pathological liar.
Sarah, I feel your pain, to be honest with you.
I'm stopping at Target. I got to go in and get me some drugs, man.
All right.
I feel like this has been 4 years already.
I know.
I can't believe it's only 45 days.
Thank you, Sarah. Be careful.
This rant sponsored by Target.
Well, I will admit this. It's very frustrating. It's very frustrating. And again, it's not fair to say this because we're going to go off the air for a break. But people who voted for Donald Trump and support Donald Trump, tell me how you, I mean, it's just crazy.
Whose job should it have been, Eric? Who should have the ability to say to Donald Trump, look, I know you like to tweet. I get it. But it's really not in your best interest or at this point any of our best interest for you to keep doing this. Who should be doing that to him?
Well, you would think that Reince Priebus, who's his chief of staff, would be the one who would have that job. His son-in-law, he trusts his son-in-law a great deal.
Yeah.
And the talk is in Washington that Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, is a moderating influence on him.
Mm-hmm.
But he does need somebody. He needs somebody really strong. And I don't think Reince Priebus is all that strong. I don't have, like, huge issues with him. He's a Republican president's chief of staff, I think. But I don't think he's a strong figure in it. And I don't think that Trump truly respects him. He needs someone very strong because he respects strength, clearly. He needs someone who is going to come in and, like, take his phone away and say, okay, look, we'll give you this back
when
Saturday at sundown. But we're not going to keep up. this kind of stream because it steps on all his messages.
Yeah.
People are saying that, well, maybe he's using this to distract from the story. But, you know, in fact, the story should have been this weekend. As I said, it should have been he gave a good speech.
Right.
He's turned the corner. He's presidential. He's reaching out to Democrats. You know, he's going to be – he's already paving the way to be reelected. And instead, it's all about this this wiretap story, this wiretap tweets, which are directly connected to this investigation of the connections to Russia. So it's not like you can distract people from the Russia story
yeah.
by bringing up this other story because they're so connected. So I don't see that. I don't see this being like a successful diversion, like, look over there, something else to look at. It does turn everything into sort of a he said, she said
yeah.
thing. It's like, well, there's all these things coming out, so you never know what to believe. And this is, I mean, if there is a broader strategy for him, it's like, you can't believe anything anymore. And I think that may be what he's going after here is like all this stuff comes out and, oh, yeah, okay, now we have this information. But you know, you can't believe anything. You can't believe what's going on. So boy, you know, it's like I thought last Tuesday we'd come in on this Monday and talk mm-hmm. about, wow, we got a new Donald Trump, a new presidency. It's a new era. But no.
But I wasn't even seeing through that because if a grown man can't stand on a stage and read a teleprompter for an hour, then something's wrong. I wasn't believing just because he was reading words off of a teleprompter that he changed his ways.
But the fact that he stuck to the teleprompter is what made me feel.
He's done it a few times in the past. There have been a couple of other times where he has stuck to the.
Well, I think he stuck to the teleprompter during his inaugural speech, but that inaugural speech, the American Carnage speech, was so dark. And
right.
so polarizing. And this was not, I mean, you know, you could perform, you know, the conventional sort of dissection of the speech and look at the policies he proposed. When I wrote about it afterwards, I said, look, I think that one of the things that he did in that speech was he overpromised. He promised everything.
Yeah.
We're going to bring dead industries roaring back. There's no problem that America has that.
Which who could disagree with any of that? It's just how you're going to make it happen.
Well, you can disagree and say this is absurd what you're saying, but no one can disagree with the goal. Everyone wants,
right.
you know, we all want everyone to have great jobs and great health care, and we want there to be, you know, all crime to go away and all these other things that he's promising. But, you know, realistically, yeah, he overpromised, and he also promised at the very end of the speech, if you remember, he said this is an end to trivial fights.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. And then a couple of days later,
yes, more trivial fights.
Psych.
But didn't he and other members of the Republican Party constantly berate Barack Obama for sticking to the teleprompter? And then when he does stick to the teleprompter and he gets high marks, all of a sudden everything's clear.
I never understood the attacks on Obama for the teleprompter. Obama was really good off a teleprompter.
Yeah.
He was a great speaker, and I think to counter the fact that he gave a really good speech, they said, well, but he's reading it off a teleprompter.
Yeah. They all have.
And
every
Trump,
president.
During his campaign, he would go to these rallies, and those were not teleprompter speeches, but they were just boring repetitions of crowd-pleasing lines.
Lock her
up. Who's going to build the wall? And so on.
Yeah.
But when you can't just do that in a State of the Union-like setting, which was what that joint address
right.
was. You can't just say, okay, everybody, we're going to build a wall. Who's going to pay for it? You can't do
yeah.
that. You have to have something to present. And every president, every politician of any level who's good at this knows that you got to choose your words carefully and stick to them, because
right.
otherwise you end up saying stupid stuff, and you
yep.
don't want to do that.
Uh-uh.
No,
thanks,
leave
Eric.
That to us.
Right.
Leave that to the professionals on the radio.
Please.
So,
Eric,
thanks,
thank
Eric.
You. It's Eric Zorn. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. We'll take a quick break, find out what Steve has next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. It's Monday. We're thrilled that you're here. We're thrilled that you're listening. If you want to participate in the show, 312-981-7200, it'd be great to hear from you.
This is our last Monday in this time slot.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And at some point, I brought this up to you on Friday. I hope you like the idea. I would like to bribe listeners. That's what it is. It's a bribe to continue to listen to us, because we won't be on what they call terrestrial radio in the afternoon starting on Monday.
Who calls it that? The aliens?
The aliens refer to this as terrestrial radio. And then they say, take us to your leader. And then when they see who our leader is, they laugh so hard. They can't believe it.
But they have orange faces too.
Yeah, right. Right. All right. So at some point, we would like to bribe you by giving you a T-shirt from our show. The Payback is a Wendy T-shirt. So fashionable, so much in vogue right now. At New York Fashion Week, that's all the models were wearing, were these Payback is a Wendy T-shirts. So at some point, we will give you a chance or two to win a T-shirt from us.
On this show?
Yeah.
Because I think we should make them wait till we're streaming,
oh.
and then they have to listen to win. You got to be in it to win it, Bill.
I never even thought of that.
But now that you said it,
we'll do one, at least one today. But more of those as we move over to other radio, the stream radio.
We're going to have a friend of ours named Eric in tomorrow, and I can never say his name right. Neva Rowski.
I wouldn't, on this Kazmir Pulaski Day, I would not want to pronounce his name incorrectly. It's Eric. Eric N. Right? Let's just go with that to be safe.
He's in tomorrow, and he's going to explain to Bill how to listen to us.
Yeah.
And you might want to be in for the ride, listeners, because then if you're unsure how to listen to the stream, if you have the app, it's really easy.
Right.
I do have the app because I like listening to Nick DiGilio straight out of context to see how many times I am featured. And
prominently.
Not anymore.
No?
Now it's you.
Oh, how about that? I wonder what happened.
I'm bringing you down.
I guess so. Oh, that's all right. Oh, I have to tell you, I'm very upset with myself. Very upset with myself.
What'd you do?
I will tell you, but I think once I tell you, you will also be upset with yourself, and I think listeners will also be upset with themselves. I read something over the weekend that I thought I was positive that I was better at, and then as it turns out, no, I'm not. Can I share this with you?
You've piqued my curiosity, right, Bill.
There's a museum in Washington, and the focus of this museum is women artists, right? So they said this, they asked this question. They said, you could probably name a bunch of men artists, but name five women artists. And I laughed and I went, well, that's a waste of time. Everyone can name five women artists. And then I could name three.
Anna Geddes.
Anne Geddes is a photographer.
I didn't even get her first name so right, they're but I was not, close.
You were close. Anne Geddes is the one that always takes pictures of babies dressed like a lion sitting on a wheelbarrow. It's a lot of that, right?
It's babies and flowers.
Yeah. Yep.
God, I don't know.
That's
embarrassing.
Think about how sad that is that in an I mean, honestly, to be an artist, I know not everyone can do that, but certainly there have been incredible women artists over the years. So why can't we name? I thought to myself, five. Watch me reel off 10, and then I could name three.
Name the three.
Frida Kahlo is an artist whose name.
No, I never heard that ever.
One of the best at Mexican art. Once you see her work, you'll go, okay, I didn't know that was Frida Kahlo, but that's who that is. Georgia O'Keeffe is
I should have known that.
She's very, very famous.
Mary Engelbreit.
I don't know who that is. Who is that?
She is an artist that does a lot of women cartoons in various places in the world, like in a garden.
Oh.
She has a calendar.
Is she contemporary? Is she working today? She is. Mary Engelbreit is her name?
Yeah, Frida Kahlo.
You've never seen her work?
I don't really think so.
I see her work a lot. All right. So then the other one, and I only know this because of her last name, is Judy Chicago. I remember her having a big art show here called The Dinner Party. And because her name is Judy Chicago, that one always sticks with me. But isn't that sad that in years and years and years and years and years of art, you could name one and I could name three. And I bet most people, the museum themselves say, we can't find too many people that can pull off five.
That's really awful. That's sad.
Why would that be?
But now I want to know if listeners, and if you know them, 312-981-7200, I want to know if I hear their names, like Renoir, Picasso, you know their work.
Right.
I want to know if I know any of the women.
Well, all right. As I was trying to figure out why that would be, why I was so wrong that I thought 10 will be easy, but I'll probably get more than 10 and then I couldn't come close. When you think about the most famous works of art, I'm not even going to say the greatest or the best works of art, most of it is dominated by men, but it shouldn't be, should it?
No.
Why would it be?
Oh my God, I'm looking at a list of several women artists. I don't know any of them.
You've not heard of their names. So is that bad PR? Are they just not getting the press they should get?
I don't think enough people go to the Art Institute.
That's true, but even if it is true, and it is true, why would we know the names of men artists and not women?
Because they've been around for a while, and we...
Was there a time when women were not allowed to paint?
No, I'm sure they were allowed to paint, but, you know, the game Masterpiece helped me figure out...
Me too. Me too. To this day, whenever I see a painting that used to be in the Parker Brothers game Masterpiece, I know that... I go, come on.
Right.
I know that one.
I'm trying to think of the name of my favorite one. I can't, but it was just all a bunch of abstract pieces together.
Yeah.
I don't remember who it was.
Yeah.
Should we take some calls on this?
Yeah, please.
I feel terrible.
It's awful, isn't it? Aren't you mad? I'm mad at myself for not knowing more.
I am too.
Well, I thought it was interesting when you brought up Renoir and the Impressionists, and Mary Cassatt was very well known as an Impressionist.
This now, is Leslie on the line.
Hi, Leslie.
Us.
Explain to us who, because that's a name I'm not familiar with and I should be. Who is Mary Cassatt?
I'm pretty sure she's American, but went to France during that time period of the Impressionists,
mm-hmm.
and is well known as an Impressionist artist. Looks a lot like Renoir and Monet.
Okay.
Yeah, some of her images I recognize when I look them up.
Really good novel for you guys called I Always Loved You.
Yeah, what's that about, Steve?
It's about Mary Cassatt.
Oh, really?
I think Edgar Degas, I think she had a relationship
also
with
her. Also a painter, an artist. Yeah.
I'm showing you some pictures.
Oh, I've seen her
and
work.
And I've seen her work, too, and I didn't know who that was, and I feel foolish.
It almost looks like if Norman Rockwell... was of that era and not the era he was of. It seems Rockwell-like to me, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Do you see a correlation at all?
No, because his was more cartoony. Like, yeah, people were more... These are beautiful.
But that's what I mean. If he was
work,
more into... It looks like oils to me. I could be wrong. But if he was more of that era... But, okay, so you... Leslie, can you name five? Mary Cassatt's one, but can you name four more women artists?
No, the only other one that I thought of was Grandma Moses.
Oh, right. I totally forgot about Grandma Moses.
Now, most people remember her.
Yeah. Yeah, that should have been a given. All right.
I don't know if I know who that is.
Grandma Moses?
I got to look it up.
She parted the Red Sea, Wendy.
No.
And gave everybody hard candies because she's a grandma.
Root beer barrels?
Yeah.
In the 70s.
Wait, say that again, Leslie. I'm sorry.
I think she only started painting when she was in her
70s. Yeah, you're right. She started much later in life. That's
very
true.
Very simplistic.
Yeah, yep.
But
oh, I know her work. Yeah, countrysides.
We don't know the work. We just don't know the names.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, which is terrible.
Leslie, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Take care.
All right, can we take a break and try and find some more?
Yeah, there should be way more. It's embarrassing. All right, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Laffin. It's Wendy Snyder. Over the weekend, I read an article about the National Museum of Women in the Arts. It's located in Washington, and they at Washington, D.C., by the way, not Washington State. And they asked a simple question. Name five female artists. And I laughed and I said, well, everyone can do that. There's been so many great female artists. And then I could only name three. And I'm embarrassed by that. That should not be the case.
And Mary Cassatt, someone called to mention. And there is a painting called The Unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a woman holding a little girl. And washing her feet in like
a basin?
Yeah, a little wash basin, a giant bowl, basically, with a pitcher there. And they had that in my nurse's office in elementary school.
And that's one of the pictures I remember from the game we talked about earlier, Masterpiece, the Parker Brothers game, Masterpiece. That's why I know that painting.
And I looked it up, and it was indeed in Masterpiece.
Yeah.
So there's Mary Cassatt. I should have known that. I knew her work and not her name. That's sad. It's a sad day in art history. Hi, Brian.
Hello there. Hey, I'm driving, so I can't search this, but I think the abstract artist Jackson Pollock, who is not a female,
mm-hmm.
I believe his wife, who went by the last name Pollock, was also highly regarded.
Well, he was married. There was a time where there was a woman named Krasner that he was married to for a short time.
Lee Krasner.
And
she was an American abstract expressionist painter.
Okay, that's probably who I'm thinking of. I thought she took his name or whatever. But so anyway, I came up with four.
Who other than Lee Krasner, who were the others?
Cassatt,
yeah.
George O'Keefe.
Yeah.
the Pollock one, which I got wrong.
Yeah.
And now I forget the other one.
But isn't that awful?
So I came up with,
that
it, came up with three.
Throughout
I
all of time,
in college.
All the women artists, and none of us can name five. That's obscene. That shouldn't be.
Yeah.
From what I understand, Jackson Pollock had a mistress, Ruth Kligman, and she said that she watched him paint all the time, and she began painting as well.
Okay, that's my fourth.
All right. You get full credit for that.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you so much.
Love the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The only reason I know Krasner is because there's a story. Jackson Pollock died very early on. He had alcohol problems.
Car crash, 1956.
Was it a car crash? Was he drunk driving?
I don't know that. It just said his fatal 1956 car crash.
Because they always talk about how, with his drinking problems, it led to his death. I bet he must have been drunk driving. Anyway, the story is he died in his early 40s. And I remember that once he married this woman, Krasner, Lee Krasner, is that her name? He took like a year where he didn't paint at all. He just wanted to fix the house up. And everybody always talks about how sad it is that we only had him for such a short period of time. But his wife convinced him instead of painting, it was more important to just do handiwork around the house and make the house look nice.
He had an affair.
Yeah.
Ed Harris directed a film. He played Pollock.
Oh, right.
Which is a really good movie.
Right. Yep.
All I know from art, I know from
from movies.
Movies and
books. That still counts.
I don't know any of these artists.
But don't you feel like how is that possible that there's not more famous women artists? Why wouldn't there be? Why couldn't a woman, of course, can paint just as well as any man? There's no reason for this.
Who's the guy with the curly hair who had the show?
Garfunkel?
No, remind me not to pick you as my charades partner.
No, all right.
The artist, Dave Ross. Is that his name? It's so funny because I used to watch him on Channel 11.
Oh, right,
he was
that guy.
Crazy and eccentric.
Right.
And now, like, Netflix has his whole thing,
yeah,
and
yeah.
The kids have been watching it.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm good. There's a portrait downtown at the Art Institute. There should be more than one, but there's only one by Alice Neal, N-E-A-L.
Who is that?
20th century lady artist. She's now deceased. She's got her own unique style. She kind of reminds me of that photographer Vivian Meyer, because even though her stuff is very straightforward, there's like a mystery behind it. And fantastic artist, first rate. I got a couple others. Helen Frankenthaler, another 20th century artist, has a very unique style, kind of drippy, part of that Pollock school, I guess.
Yeah.
There's a Joan Mitchell. I'm guessing it's Joan Lady, not Hoan, as in Miro. But one of hers is also downtown. And I used to think that was Joni Mitchell, the folk singer.
Different Mitchell.
Then I think there's a Chicago lady, Gertrude Abercrombie, who's also kind of mysterious. Almost has kind of a like a Max Ernst quality. But, you know, the reason why you don't hear about more lady artists.
Why?
Oh, I'll tell you exactly. If you read this book by Virginia Woolf called A Room of One's Own.
Yeah.
That'll tell you. That will answer your question.
All right. I'm afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Don't be.
All right. I'm not
a
anymore.
A room of one's own?
A room of one's own.
All right. I'll find it. You're ahead of the game, Jim.
But don't leave us in suspense.
At least I'm in the game.
I mean, no spoiler alert, but can you give us a general blanket statement as to why there aren't women?
No. Read the book.
All right.
It's a short book.
Okay.
All righty.
I'll read it and I'll act it out for you, Wendy.
Okay, perfect.
All right.
Jim, thank you.
Thanks,
very
Jim.
Much. It's Bob Ross, by the way. That's the
Bob
guy
Ross.
With the curly hair and
right.
the goatee.
Yeah.
And he, the joy of painting. He
right.
had a great fro.
He just died, and then they didn't he? And then they released all of his stuff on Netflix.
Yeah, he's like kind of like a Mr. Rogers
yeah.
who
Pretty
paints.
Encouraging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's another guy who I've seen on Channel 11 who just uses, like, popsicle sticks and stuff.
Well, that was Pollock's thing, right, Steve? Jackson Pollock would use sticks or spoons.
Never a paintbrush.
I know he splattered a lot.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
It was a mess. Mrs. Pollock not happy with
his son. Stop splattering, Jackson.
You'll never amount to anything.
All right, Bert, how are you?
I'm good. And I hope my wife isn't listening because she thinks I'm a chauvinist.
Oh, no.
This will come as a surprise. No, I'm joking. But, you know, if you think about it, it's not just art. If you look at music composition, novels, any art field or almost any field. It isn't until relatively recently that women were enfranchised and had not just the opportunity to do the work, but to get the recognition. You know, you look back to like the Salon de Refusés, where Impressionism started, and it was all men.
Yeah, sure.
And think about it. Wasn't it just the 50th anniversary of S.E. Hinton's The Outsiders? I mean...
Right.
That's
so. That shows how recent all this has been evolving.
Yeah.
Finally,
I mean, how long ago did women get the vote? You know, and now it seems, you know, ridiculous and even outrageous that they wouldn't have had that opportunity.
Sure,
but they didn't.
Yeah,
it wasn't there. It didn't exist.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing that. I hope your wife is listening because maybe you'll get a little something tonight.
I'll never hear the end of it. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Bert.
Appreciate it.
I thought that was nice what he said. He didn't say he agreed with it.
No, of course. All right. We'll take a break. Some news, Steve with the news, and then there's a lot more show. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Hey, yeah.
Wendy, you're familiar with the work of Rex Hupke, correct?
I am. I hear him on the station.
Yeah, he's a frequent contributor to the station, and he writes for the Chicago Tribune. He just put something in his column a few days ago that I think you'll enjoy. According to Rex, and I tend to agree with him here, he says every workplace has seven basic commonalities. These are people who just seem to be involved no matter what you do for a living, no matter what your job is. These seven people probably inhabit your office. Shall we go through them and see if he's right?
Yes.
All right. The first one uses foul language. You know how Rex Hupke is. He's always swearing and stuff.
You mean columnist Hupke?
Yes, that's what I mean. The blank hole. You know what I mean. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, somebody we don't work have with. Too many of those around here.
Well, he says every office has one. Some offices have many. It's even possible that you're the one and you don't realize it. Is that possible?
Uh-oh, maybe that's why I'm not thinking there are any around here.
Maybe.
I'm not that.
No.
I'm several things, but
you're
I'm
the
not
other
that.
Six, but you're not this one.
Right.
Whew. These people, the blank holes, are disruptive, they're difficult, and only interested in advancing their own careers or somehow making yours more miserable. There's nothing you can do with that person, aside from report her or him to your boss or human resources if the behavior becomes too bad. But there's also a chance that your boss or HR representative is the aforementioned.
Oh.
And that's possible,
right?
Not
here.
Not here. Certainly not here. Although in the past.
I think we've weeded. Oh, yeah.
In the past.
I wasn't here then.
No, you were not here then. But anyone who worked here during the dark years will tell you that, yeah, management fit that description. For a while there.
And there are some people who were that particular person that are not here any longer.
Yeah, no one really comes to mind. I'm not just saying that. I have no reason to just say that. But here, we're lucky. There's not a single person that if I see them coming in the hall, I cringe. Is there for you?
No. Just you.
Just me. That's fine. But to just steer clear and take comfort in the fact that every coworker who does not fall into that category hates the person just as much as you do. That seems to be true. If there is somebody at your workplace that everybody considers to be that guy, you say, what about Mark? That guy, huh? Crazy? The hand raiser. This is a colleague who, no matter how short a meeting should be, always raises his or her hand to ask just one more question.
That might be me.
That one's you.
I can deal with any of you guys. Get me out of the meeting.
Yeah.
Don't extend it.
I enjoy my meetings.
Especially for points, you know, that's a clever point. Thank you for raising it. Now, get me out of here.
Sometimes, Steve, Wendy and I, and usually Kevin, if Kevin's not off surfing in California like he is now, will be asked during the noon break to sit in with a potential new client, and they'll pitch us on something. And as they've showed it to us, and we think, then what'll happen?
I have a couple of questions that I'd like to ask, but I'm trying to get to know somebody because if it's a new client,
right.
I want to know them. I want to be happy about their work. I want to enjoy them.
Right.
I know you guys are always in a hurry to leave, and I'm sorry. Next time I'll just say, you know, when they wrap up the meeting, I'll let you and Kevin walk out, and then I'll just stay and chat with them for a while.
That'd be fine.
I just want to make them feel welcome.
It's never, I'm making it sound like it goes on and on and on, and it
no.
can't because we're back on the air at 1 o'clock.
I do always
used to be.
Yeah, no, this is our last Monday.
Now we'll have a lot more time for those questions.
You'll still leave. There was a meeting that I hate to bring this up on the air, but you had to leave because you had a conference call.
Right.
Would you like to take this one?
I didn't really have a conference call. The meeting just went on too long.
I can't believe you.
Well, yeah, I know. But it was a lot. So you knew when I said I have to go. I think I even said pretend conference call, didn't I?
You might have.
I have to go. I've got a pretend conference call.
I believe the lobster truck was outside.
That's it. That's it, exactly.
And this is
our favorite
for
food
reals.
Truck was out and back, and I didn't want to miss
the Happy Lobster, which where have they been lately?
I don't know.
I like how Bill says our favorite.
Well, he kind of
really,
turned me
it's
on
really
to
good,
that.
Good, Steve.
And that's what happened. We had to.
I remember that day, Wendy. I remember the meeting.
Well, let's not say too much.
No, but I just remember being in studio, and he's like, "What? It's the lobster truck is out there."
So he faked a conference call, which is just funny because
who would put me on a conference call
by yourself? Not many people. Usually, I mean, it would be a show thing, but
but they bought it. It seemed legit, didn't it?
Because they trusted you.
No, I guess.
I don't think they're a sponsor.
No, they canceled immediately. Wendy,
be the a-hole.
I'm not. See if you know this person in our workplace.
All
ready?
Right. Yeah.
Johnny or Janie talks too much.
Well, that'd be me too. I'm sorry.
Common in most offices, the talks too muches are not inherently bad or difficult coworkers. They just, as the name implies, and Rex says never shuts up, but that's not polite, but accurate. Asking one of them a question invariably results in a lengthy monologue detailing with what have you been up to lately, problems that they've recently encountered, the crazy thing that their kids just did just the other day, and often a precise and thorough accounting of what they had for lunch.
That's me.
That's you.
I'm sorry. But can I just say,
yes.
I only do it to you and Kevin.
Yes.
And Joey heard a little of it today because he's in for Kevin. But I just, you know, you don't understand the camaraderie I feel because I'm with you guys more than I am my own family.
Yes.
That will change next week because we have shortened hours.
Yes.
Then I will want longer hours.
What did you get for lunch, meaning me, what do I say every
Arby's.
Day? Arby's. And why do I say that?
Because you don't want to talk to me because you're rude and you are the a-hole. Okay, I might be all the other things, but you're the one.
It's because I know if I go into depth and I tell you the name of the restaurant, I will hear how many times you've been there, what you've ordered from there.
No, I would say, oh, is that good?
But that's already too much for me. Isn't that too much? Of course it's good. I wouldn't order it if it wasn't good.
Whatever, I'm done talking to you. I try to fake interest in things you care about, like what toys are on sale on eBay.
Yeah.
You know, that's just rude.
It's not rude.
It is. I mean,
I learned a long time ago, if I see anything other than Arby's, the next 40 minutes is going to be spent. Me going, all right, one time I had the cottage fries there. They're not as good. I like the regular fries.
Can
the
I tell you
fries
something?
Are too salty.
I don't usually go to the places you go to, so that's a lie.
But do you ask every day?
I ask because I'm interested. Oh, what'd
what
you
do
get
I say
for lunch?
Every day?
Arby's.
Well, shouldn't that be a red flag?
That you're rude? Yeah, I guess.
But at some point, like if I did that to you every day, if I said, what'd you have for lunch? Like by the end of the second or third day, I'd go, well, she's just going to say Arby's every day. I don't need that.
Well, you break sometimes.
Not usually. Not usually. The genuinely good dude. Who would that be in our office?
Not you.
Not me. That would be Steve.
The genuinely good dude.
Thankfully, offices always come with a few people who fall under this category.
I'm afraid it would be Kevin.
Be Kevin.
Yeah.
Kevin is, you know, he diffuses our lunchroom fight every day when you say Arby's. And he also, when we have things that we don't know, like how we're going to do it, he always has the typical, don't worry, we'll figure it out.
Yes.
Even if he doesn't know how we're going to figure it out, he does calm our nerves.
He's soothing, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He's soothing Kevin. Not necessary. He's like a Perry Como album. Kevin is a modern day Perry Como album.
He lies down at his desk.
Yes. He will do that.
Blanket.
Yep. Right. Not necessarily best friend material. Kevin's best friend material. He's not here to defend or applaud himself, but
it makes me uncomfortable being nice to him.
Yeah.
Well, you don't like to be nice to anybody.
That's not true.
Why did you say that?
Because you like to stir it up. Admit it.
What did I do today?
Nothing today.
Where'd you go to lunch today, Bill?
Arby's.
Oh, it's good.
Not necessarily.
That's just nice to know that you don't want to talk to me ever.
No, it's not that I don't want to talk to you. I know if I tell you where it is, there will be a lot of time spent hearing the history of you with whatever restaurant
I've
it is.
I've never eaten at places you've gone to. So that you
are
don't,
you living you, vicariously through me?
Yes.
Oh,
you're the one that turned me on to the damn Happy Lobster truck.
How about Blackie's? You ever been there?
No.
Oh, shoot.
They're gone. They're not there
Boston
anymore.
Blackie's?
Yeah,
yeah gone. They're gone.
I thought you were going to tell me about their fries. That's why I brought it up.
I don't do any of that he claims I do because I don't eat at the places Bill eats at.
So he's totally making it up?
I don't know what I honestly, places you say you've gone to, I'm like, oh, is it good? Because I've never been there. So I'm genuinely curious.
Bill, this is where you would give us a concrete example of
Arby's. That I've been to. Curly fries. I like the horsey sauce with a little bit of the, you know, Arby's sauce. That I can talk to you about. So really, you're reversing it. You say Arby's. I'll talk to you for 20 minutes about Arby's.
But that's my secret desire is I want to discuss more. I want more Arby's talk during the break. That's what I want.
I'm going to just talk to Kevin when he comes back.
If he comes back. I don't know if he's coming
back. I'm the nice guy here, right?
Yes.
Today?
Yes.
Yeah. You guys have a fluctuating niceness.
I don't know why you...
All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. I'm going to run out to Arby's.
Maybe don't do that to me.
Maybe Wendy will cool down a
maybe.
Little bit.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe, maybe not. And then more of the people that you work. These are the people in your neighborhood. They're in your neighborhood. You work with them. We'll find out who they are next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Boogie on down now. Where'd you go for lunch today, Bill?
I had Arby's. It was delicious. Rex Hupke is a writer for the Chicago Tribune who just did an article about the seven people that every workplace seems to have. The blank hole, you fill in the blank. The hand raiser, that's the person that when the meeting is over, they raise their hands because they have to, one more question before we go, and then it's a long question. Johnny or Janie talks too much. I don't know what that one refers to at all.
Me. All these are me except the a-hole, and maybe I'm an a-hole every once in a while, too.
The genuinely good person who is a cross between Kevin and Steve Says Himself. And that could be, Steve, it could be you. It could very well be you.
I just cleared my throat. I didn't really say anything. I'm honored.
What about this person, the narc? Does every workplace have the narc? A sort of subgroup of the blank hole, a narc is a person who is always looking for ways to undermine his colleagues, sometimes more innocently described as the gossip.
That is not me.
That is not you.
Did you see that Bill took your pencil this morning, Wendy?
That is you. That is totally Steve.
Steve will throw some salt
in
the wound.
He likes to mix it up.
Sure.
Stir it up. Little darling?
It's a nice pencil. I just wanted you to know. I thought you'd want. I'd want you to tell me.
The narc is strategic in his or her leaking of information to others. If you missed a meeting but the boss didn't find out, the narc might conveniently bring up that meeting when the boss is around and then say to you, you were at that meeting, right?
I hate people like that.
Mm-hmm. Once identified, you should treat the narc as a live-in microphone and assume anything you say will be recorded and then used against you.
That's the person you say Arby's to every day, not me.
Right. Right.
Man.
Now, this one is very funny because I think as I explain this, some people will go, I don't understand. What does that mean? But I totally get this. The Dan. D-A-N. The Dan. Pretty much every office has a Dan. He's, you know, he's just Dan. Whatever.
We had Dan Richman.
No, well, it doesn't have to be a guy named Dan. It's just representative of a guy who's just there. They don't do anything great. They don't do anything terrible. They just are there, and that's it. But if you're putting out a Broadway musical, Wendy, no one knows this more than you. You got to have a chorus.
Right, but here I don't see very many people that are the Dan.
We may be in a business where it's almost impossible to be that kind of a
right.
guy.
You have to get noticed. You have to make sales. You have to do stuff. Yeah, that's true.
But I've worked in places. Haven't you been in a place where there's a bunch of people who are, you go, I see that guy all the time. I don't know what that guy does. He's just here. He just shows up all the time.
Yeah, but I'd be the one to go introduce myself to him and... find out
where did you have lunch?
Yeah, and then see, we'd become best friends because someone talked to him.
I used to eat with a guy who had Arby's every day, but I had him fired.
I guess I do know that there are people like that, but I really do try to get to know them.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? Can we take Mike's call?
Hi, Mike. What's up, Mike?
Mike, what's wrong?
Hi, how are you?
Good. We're great. What's going on?
I just wanted to say, I used to listen to Bill all the time on Midnights.
Yeah.
And when he was, this is Mike from the North Side, I brought you all the Girl Scout cookies.
Taxi cab, Mike.
Yeah, that's my second job.
Yeah.
And you talked, you were so happy when you were going to Days.
Yes.
And you were going to go work with Wendy, your radio wife. You had your regular wife and family.
Yes.
And then you had your radio wife.
Yes.
And you were so happy, and now you're picking on her. You won't tell her what you're doing for lunch. And I wanted to ask you, did you ever get all the questions I sent you for WGN Epperty?
No, I didn't. How long ago did you send them?
Well, I sent them a few years ago.
Well, the mail's, the mail's very slow in Chicago. I know they'll get here eventually.
He's stuck on four.
Hey, Mike. He's not picking on me, and that's part of the fun of working with him. Plus, the honeymoon's over.
Right. Yeah, the honeymoon's over. I wrote these all out, and then I looked at them. I go, these are too hard.
Oh.
So I made them so just about anybody with any Chicago knowledge can answer them, like, you know, who's your favorite witch?
Yeah.
Now don't say Jane Byrne. You would say Icky Witch. Something like that. Or who's your favorite fighter never to win a fight? And it would be Keith Magnuson.
Wow.
Maybe that's maybe you did get them and you just decided not to use them.
No, I never saw them. Did you send them here to the station, Mike, to GN?
Yeah. No, I just dropped them off at I just dropped them off at Wimbledon, and I figure sooner or later he'll be playing in there.
He will be.
You did real good in the senior tournament. You went down to Indianapolis, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'll look through the mailroom, but if it's been years, I fear that they've been lost at sea. I don't know where they could possibly be.
I'll have to rewrite it. I'm usually working during the day, but we have, for Pulaski Day.
Mm-hmm.
And the next time you're on the northwest side of the city, the funniest thing, if you go to the southeast corner of Pulaski and Addison,
mm-hmm.
there's a street sign, green and white, that says Pulaski. And then underneath it is an honorary street sign that says Pulaski.
Oh, wow.
Like,
how about that?
They rename it twice.
Money well spent.
Mike, if you come up with more questions, Bill will meet you at an Arby's because he goes there for
lunch
every day.
Every day.
No. I'll tell you what. If you want to meet, I'll treat you to lunch or dinner. It'll be over at Superdog. It's not going to be at an Arby's.
All right. Someplace nice like Superdog. I'm in. All right. Well, thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Take care.
I'll send you another set of questions.
All right. Thanks very much.
You got to bring that back. That was highly entertaining.
WGN Upperty? All right. I can do that. One more quick one. This is the last of the office people that you'll probably encounter no matter where you work. Snack nose. There are always a few people around whose senses are keenly attuned to the presence of any type of outside snack. They can hear the foil being removed from a plate of homemade cookies from several city blocks away, and they're generally the very first to swoop in, whether they're invited or not. When communal food is presented, again, not a bad person, just somebody to watch out for if you only intend to share your snacks with a limited group.
That would be Terry Savage.
It could be. Yeah.
She is adorable. She's on the Wintrust Business Lunch frequently. Yeah. And there was one day that we had a food drop-off, and she came into our office, and she left me a little note on a paper towel that said, "Sorry, Wendy, I had to have half this cookie."
Right.
"Love, Terry."
Right.
So that would be Terry Savage.
I think it might be. All right.
She gave me 20 to help you buy a new cookie that I never did.
Oh, you didn't pass it along.
I never gave that to you?
No, you're right, I didn't.
Whatever. I like to share.
All right, let's take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's more show. Stay here, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder with you on WGN. It's hard to believe, but it's been nearly 2 years since David Letterman was the host of The Late Show over on CBS. In May, it'll be 2 years already.
Has it been 2 years since he shaved also?
It's been about 2 years since he shaved. He doesn't give a lot of interviews, but he recently did give an interview with New York Magazine. Jason Nathanson of ABC News is on with us to discuss that very interview. Hi, Jason, how are you?
And I can confirm he still looks like a homeless Santa Claus.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
I miss him.
The beard is still there. And I swear to God, he hasn't cut it since the day he left. That's exactly what it looks
does
like.
Does he say why? Is it just one of those matters of, I don't need to shave anymore? I don't. Why would I? Is it one of those?
They get into it a little bit, but he says, let me see if I can find that. I wasn't expecting to talk to get into the beard stuff quite so quickly here.
Sorry. That's all right. You do some research. Whatever you know, just let us know.
Let's see. What did they say? No, they make some Walt Whitman jokes, but that's about it. He doesn't get into why exactly he still likes it.
Jason, when Johnny Carson retired from The Tonight Show, he said, you'll see me. I'll do the occasional special. I'll show up on stuff. You'll see me. And then we didn't see him. He stopped showing up on stuff. What was David's reason for doing this interview, and will we see more of him in the future, do you think?
It's weird. We don't really have a reason for why he did the interview, but he does go into stuff that he's been asked to do and why he is or is not doing certain things. You know, he basically says he'd still just like to be fishing, and that's it. He had trouble. It's a wide-ranging interview. He talks about going to a shoe store, a big one of those massive chain shoe stores, and just having severe anxiety about going out in public and trying to do the simplest thing like buying shoelaces. He really has a tough time doing that kind of stuff. So that's hard for him. You can imagine doing any kind of other thing in the show business world is also hard for him as well. He said he was offered a cameo on Veep, which he would have loved to have done, but he said he called them up and said, look, it's going to be torture for me. I'm just going to get there, and I'm going to ruin your day and your show, so I'm not going to do it. So he has things he wants to do, it sounds like. Maybe some internet stuff. They talk about Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, something like that. He says he doesn't have a problem. If he does something else, it doesn't have to be necessarily on TV. He would embrace streaming, but no concrete ideas of anything he's going to do or if we're going to physically see him in some medium again.
You know, when I thought we'd see him and we didn't, is he was very close with Mary Tyler Moore. He was on her variety show and had her as a frequent guest and really seemed to be very close to Mary Tyler Moore. And when she died a short time ago, I really thought we'd get a big, long statement from him. And I didn't see anything. Did you?
No, I didn't see anything either. And they don't mention that in this article. Again, it's a wide-ranging thing. They do cover a lot of different things. And you would think if that was something he wanted to talk about or bring up, they would. But they didn't talk about that. They talked about Trump quite a bit.
Yeah.
Most of it is about Trump, but not Mary Tyler Moore.
All right, so give us the lowdown on Trump. He is not happy with our current president, is he?
No, he's okay. So they spent a lot of time talking about the various things about Trump. So he said, started off by saying, if he were doing a show right now, it would all be Trump. It would be an hour on Trump. People would say, Dave, that's enough about Trump. We've run out of tape. It's all I'd talk about. I'd be exhausted. He says Trump's the president, and he can lie about anything from the time he wakes up to what he's had for lunch, and he's still the president. I don't get that. I'm tired of people being bewildered about everything he says. We got to stop that and instead figure out ways to protect ourselves from him. We know he's crazy. We got to take care of ourselves here now. And how we take care of ourselves or protect ourselves from him, he says comedy is one way we can do that. Alec Baldwin deserves the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Sadly, he's not going to get it from this president.
Right.
So he was asked to explain that a little more. How do we protect ourselves from Donald Trump through comedy? How does satire protect us? And he says that Trump has such a thin skin that if you keep putting pressure on him, it's going to affect him and eventually he'll implode. And you have to remember, Trump was on Letterman's
frequently.
Show. Yeah, I mean, he was a frequent guest. And in the beginning, it was just kind of, it was fun. They kind of messed around with him a little bit. They messed around with his public persona and larger than life. And he could take a joke at that point. The two of them went at it. And then it started to get a little more contentious. You remember him telling Trump that his ties were made in China and things like that. And Trump's face was not happy then. And then he said, still, though, if he had a show, the one person he'd want to interview who was still living, would be Trump. He'd like to do an hour to an hour and a half with him and basically scold him the whole time.
Although if Donald Trump would talk to David Letterman, I think that would be a pretty great interview.
Oh, you mean a standalone, like a Barbara Walters style?
If Donald Trump would answer questions, I think we'd learn a lot from it.
They got a little bit into the whole Jimmy Fallon thing, which is, you know, a lot of people thought Jimmy Fallon fell down on the job when he interviewed Trump last year, and the basic thing we got out of it was Fallon messing up Trump's hair.
Yeah.
And asked about that and whether or not that was lightweight or if he should have held Trump's feet to the fire at that point. And Letterman wouldn't really get into bashing Fallon. He said he didn't want to do that. But, yeah, he said, you know, it's the job of people to especially in late night, and that's what it's become these days, to try to hold these people accountable. But he noticed that the trend is that in your monologue and in your comedy bits, you do really funny, you attack more, especially when it comes to politics, and you're a little heavier on that. But when it comes to the interviews, that's when you get really light, or that's when most people these days are going really, really light with their interviews.
You know, that Jimmy Fallon is very light in his interviews, and I don't knock him for doing what he does. That's what he does. He wouldn't do an in-depth, serious interview with Donald Trump.
He's got his thing, but, you know, on the other hand, some people would say, well, you're the only ones getting access to these guys at this point. You know, they're not doing all the other shows. They're doing the late-night shows to try to improve their image or for whatever reason. So you're helping him by doing that, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, Fallon's reputation has not been that of a Jon Stewart, say, or a Colbert. So you're right. He does what he does.
That's probably why Donald Trump agreed to do it.
Sure it is.
Exactly. You pick your spots. You know where you're going to go. At some point, Trump stopped doing Kimmel. He stopped doing Colbert. Did he ever do Colbert?
I don't think he ever did, no.
So he didn't do that, and he goes where he knows he's going to get the best press, and somebody's going to mess up his hair, and that's going to be the story.
Not only did he not do Colbert, but he explained how he turned down Colbert's producers, that they were going after him, and he said, no, I don't want any part of the show. And then Colbert came on and said, we had a meeting, and we said, did any of you ever attempt to get him on? And they all said, no, none of us tried to. So...
You know, and that's interesting. I don't know that I necessarily believe that. That, you know, that's the first thing you're going to try to do in late night. So maybe that's true, maybe not. I don't know. But if Trump were on Colbert, Letterman would not have watched, because he actually says he's never watched the show. He's never watched his old show. He sees a clip every now and then, you know, when it makes it onto the internet, but he's never sat down and watched the show. And in fact, he doesn't watch any of the shows. He did it for so long. He's not up at that time, and he just doesn't care.
That makes sense to me. It really does.
After you live it for so long, you have your fill of it.
And you're done.
Right, I guess so. You know, I remember, Jason, and it's two different events that I think changed David Letterman and the way he did his own show. He never did softball interviews, but he was a little light with the interviews. And then you had September 11th, and then you also had his heart surgery. And I remember after those two things, he came out swinging. Like when he would do an interview, he wasn't holding back anymore.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely changed and saw, you know, I think what was a little more important. And also, I think in that same time period was the birth of his son, which is the most important thing to him right now. I mean, if you go through this article, it's all he talks about and all he loves to do is be a dad, basically. So he wanted to be a little more important and a little less wacky and less of a goofball. But he also talks about how he modeled Carson in the beginning of his career. And Carson, you know, famously never talked about the Vietnam War, never wanted to have anything to do with that kind of political type stuff, because he didn't really want to offend people. He wanted his place to be a refuge from, you would watch the news at 6 o'clock, and then you would get a break from that by watching Carson.
Yeah.
And Letterman talks about how he patterned his show after that for a long time, until a couple things happened, one of them being Monica Lewinsky, which he just, you know, you could not help but be political and do political jokes about that. And then 9/11 happened, and so it wasn't so much jokes about that, but the personality of George W. Bush also lent itself very easily to doing lots of jokes.
Yeah.
So he started to become a lot more political around that time.
Does he realize, I hope he realizes, that just as Johnny Carson kind of showed him the way and how to be a late-night talk show host, every one of the guys who does it now always points to Letterman and said, that's the guy who was the best at it and who I want to emulate. He realizes that, doesn't he?
They don't get into that here, but I know he's heard that. I don't know if he actually internalizes it, because he's so self-deprecating and he's so kind of shy and thinks he's screwing. He's full of just phobias and thinks he's doing everything wrong. So I don't know that he would ever admit that that was the case, that he paved the way for a lot of these guys, or that they followed him. I mean, Colbert famously says Letterman started on TV when Colbert started in college. And that's when everybody, that's when you start to watch a lot of these late night shows. And
yeah.
So he was extremely formative. But, you know, Letterman being who he is, you know, it's hard enough for him to wake up in the morning and be a parent and do that kind of stuff. So I don't think he'd ever admit to taking that and internalizing that. Hmm.
That's sad after such a long run at being such a funny, wonderful television host that he doesn't believe in himself and he has no self-confidence. That's sad to me.
Yeah, it is. But he's always kind of been that kind of sad figure. And you can see it on TV. They talk a little bit about some of the, when he had to do bits that he didn't really feel comfortable. He didn't look comfortable, like doing some of the stupid pet tricks and things like that. He felt like he was leading a three-ring circus. It wasn't exactly where he wanted to be. He's never really felt comfortable. He's never felt like he was part of the in crowd. He's never felt like he belonged in Hollywood. He always felt like he was an outsider, talking to a lot of the guests that he would talk to. And that doesn't go away. It doesn't matter how much success you have, how long you've been on television, that never goes away.
Jason, explain this to me. David Letterman's been off of network TV for 2 years. Jon Stewart has been off of his show, The Daily Show, for roughly 2 years. And yet in those 2 years, they both look like they've aged 5 to 10 years. You would think it'd be the opposite, that the pressure of doing those shows on a daily basis would age you, but it's been retirement that's aging them. How can that be?
Because, I mean, maybe staying in front of the camera keeps you young at the same time.
Oh,
yeah.
Maybe.
Well, yeah, you have to look good. You have to shave every day. Now they're just like, you
but
know.
But not just shaving. Just, you know, David's lost most of his hair. Jon Stewart's has gone all gray and white. They just look so much older than just 2 short years ago.
Maybe they stopped coloring their hair.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
And there's something to that. And also, you know, when you're on TV, you're wearing makeup. You're all made up. Your hair's all done.
Yeah.
You don't have to keep up with the personal grooming as much. But I think there's also something, there's an energy that comes with being in front of the camera and talking to people. And whether Letterman would admit he was influential or not, people still watched him. And he fed off that. You know, it's kind of like feeding off the blood of when you're a vampire, right? off the blood of young people and taking their energy. I think they did feel that. So, you know, I don't know if that affects their looks or not, but there was something there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's Jason Nathanson of ABC News telling us about the interview with David Letterman that you can find in New York Magazine right now, as a matter of fact. Thanks so much for being here, Jason. Greatly appreciated.
Anytime. Take care, guys.
Okay, you too. I'll take a quick break, and then there's more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We were talking to ABC News, Jason Nathanson. And, you know, some texts have been coming in, and someone mentioned the affair he had with his intern, David Letterman. I don't remember any of this, so did some work here, and this according to the Daily Mail. This was last April. So April 2 years ago, I guess, 2015. David Letterman opened up about his career in a new interview right before he retired. He admits CBS should have fired him when it was revealed he had an affair with former intern Stephanie Burkitt, who became his assistant.
Yeah.
This was revealed in 2009 after a producer on The Letterman Show tried to extort him for $2 million, saying that he would reveal the affair if Letterman did not pay this person. So Letterman just revealed the affair.
Yeah.
Saved him $2 million. He wasn't married at the time, was he?
He was not married at the time of the affair. He was married at the time the details were revealed.
Letterman also revealed he was not consulted as to who would be his replacement, but that it would be a good opportunity to put a woman on.
Mm-hmm.
He says he liked Stephen Colbert, but thought it would be Jon Stewart taking over. And he also apologized for his recent treat a lady like a woman of the evening joke. I don't know what that is. Saying
that is.
I don't know why I would say something like that.
It's interesting that he thought CBS should have fired him because it was, I don't know if you watched the show during the week or couple of weeks that that affair was revealed, but it was a very strange tone to the show. And he would, it's really strange, he would reference it and make jokes about it. I remember he did some joke where he goes, things are really rough at my house lately. And then it gets really quiet. He goes, even the female voice that gives me directions in the car isn't speaking to me.
See, that is so funny, though.
Yeah. I mean,
he played it, but you could tell that things were a little tense behind the scenes for a bit.
Why didn't they fire him? They had a contract with them, I guess.
Yeah, but there's a morals clause in the contract that I guess you could argue was broken there. But I think at that point, you know, it had already happened. I'm not saying it was right. It wasn't right. But I don't know. Would they have been okay with that scandal? They already had one scandal. Then to fire him, it would have made it even worse.
I don't even remember. I was not good at watching his last shows. I kind of fell out of the habit of David Letterman.
Did you?
But, you know, back when he was on, that was religion to me.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The last year was really interesting. It was much like Johnny Carson's last year, where the realization was there, I can do anything at this point. What are they going to do? I only
exactly.
have a couple more months. They can't. So he really had a very interesting attitude, I'll just say whatever I feel like saying and do whatever I feel like doing, much like Carson did in his last year. All right, we'll do this. We'll take a quick break. Steve will give you the news, and then we have more show for you. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Don't forget, before the show is over, which is in the next 20-some-odd minutes, we will bribe you. We want you to come along. You know, in a week, Wendy and me, we won't be doing afternoons anymore. We'll still be out in the mornings from 10 to noon, although I think that show will suffer too, don't you? I don't think it'll be as good as it used to be.
It could go either way. We, you know, could try and fit a lot more into the 2 hours we have on the terrestrial radio dial.
That's not our way.
It sure is.
I don't see that happening. Why would we do that?
Honest.
Why would we do that? You get the same crappy show you've been listening to for the last couple of years in the morning, and then no show in the afternoon.
But John Williams will up the ante,
right?
By taking this shift 1 to 3,
right?
And we're going to be streaming at WGN Plus between noon and one. We're going to run right up there during the noon news.
Yeah.
You have Steve Bertrand on AM 720.
So they're still Steve's still doing the Wintrust business lunch.
For
that's
now.
Not, yeah, I know.
I'm sorry?
Nothing.
We're going to come in and
nothing.
Sabotage him.
Narc.
So that show remains intact, and you can always order the box set. I see this at Rose Records.
Actually, we
the
don't
Wintrust
have a
business lunch box set with Steve.
We have a boxing set. We don't have a box set. It comes with a bag.
Right.
A couple of gloves.
Right. So that'll still be on, but you'll have the option of listening to us on what they call the stream. And tomorrow, our friend Eric from WGN,
Eric N.,
will be by to explain what that means to everybody, including myself, because I don't know what that means.
You don't have to worry about it because you'll be doing it.
Right.
But you can listen to it at a later date because it'll also be put up as a podcast,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
I'll help you through this.
I'm going to need somebody to help because I don't understand it at all. All right, so all that takes place a week from today. Don't panic. Everything's fine. Or so
have you
we've
gotten a lot
told.
Of condolence emails?
Yes.
It's not.
It's like a loved one has passed away.
I hate to say this, but, you know, I would like to be on the air, but I also like to do other things, too.
Yeah.
So it's not such a bad thing.
Right. This will leave both of us more time for our scrapbooking. And I keep wanting to make a sweater. I keep wanting to knit a sweater, and I don't have the time. And now I will have the time. Everyone's getting a sweater. I'm making a sweater for everybody.
I'm going to scrapbook about the days when we had a 4-hour show.
Yeah, do that.
Okay.
Pictures of me and you with the caption, "In happier times."
Right.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing.
And it's good for John Williams.
It's great for John and his minions.
He has minions?
Yeah, he's got minions. Those little yellow guys from the movies. They're going to be
nothing.
His co-host. Yeah, you'll hear a lot of that. And Teddy Roosevelt. All right, so
it's Thomas Jefferson.
Thomas Jefferson. Who can tell them apart, these presidents? They're all the same. All right. Can we give away? Because I don't
do
want
it now.
Let's just give away one or two. What do you? It's up to you.
You're the one who put this on in T-shirt form. You and Mark Doyle from Rags of Honor and David Hochberg paid for them.
Right. Right.
So Pearl Mortgage, it says on the back, is bigger than the logo on the front.
Yes.
But that's okay.
He knows what he's doing.
He is really smart.
He's very smart. All right.
He financed the shirts.
Yeah, he did. He did. All right, so here's your chance.
Why do you want them, people?
Oh, people love these, Wendy. Everywhere I go, people say that these shirts have changed their lives.
It says payback is a Wendy because you guys were, I guess, just telling it like it is.
Yeah.
And we need a shirt together. I think people just hear free t-shirt. They don't care what's on it. They just want it.
That's probably true.
Can the next round be like one of us and without our faces?
No, I think that's what makes this.
What would you put on it?
Right. I think your face on it is what's making it such a valuable commodity.
It's an eerie picture.
Yeah, it is. Like
it's got those Jesus eyes that follows you all over the room.
Right.
If you follow Steve Bertrand on Facebook, you can see that demonstrated.
Yeah.
I'm always watching you.
And that's true.
Here's a selling point. It's a very nice cotton blend. Wouldn't you agree with me?
It's a
very nice cotton
blend. Rags of Honor t-shirts are awesome.
Yeah.
They really are.
Top
high quality. Yep.
Very nice shirts. You can wear it anywhere. You can wear it, let's say you have an important evening coming up, a wedding, an anniversary.
Sleep in it. That's what I like to say.
I had dinner with friends on Saturday. I wore it out to dinner.
What was their reaction, Steve? What'd they do?
I had a shirt and a sweater over it, so they didn't see it, but it was comfortable.
All right. That's all that counts. All right, so let's give away two. We're in a very generous mood. We've got nothing to lose. So give us a call right now at 312-981-7200. Be caller number 8. Be caller number 11. If you're caller number 8 or 11, you will win one of these highly coveted, very nice cotton blend shirts with Wendy's picture right there on the front.
I don't know why you people want them. I'm not even kidding you.
Really? Everyone who has gotten one so far has had very nice things to say. Very nice things.
I'm just here for you to make fun of, aren't I?
No.
It's taken me over 3 years to figure that out.
This is a shirt that is an all-purpose shirt. You can wear it, like I said, to a function. Let's say you've just met someone on Tinder and you want to impress those people.
Don't wear that.
Throw the shirt on. All right, so callers 8 and 11, again, at 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll find out who wins these highly coveted collector's items from the show, and then there's more to tell you next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Are we sending out an SOS? Does someone need to help us?
Well, it's not an SOS so much as a shirt, a very nice cotton blend shirt. It's the Bill and Wendy Show t-shirt. A very limited supply of these have been made so far. We have two chances for you to win one. And who are today's winners?
Tom from Chicago and Tony from Shanahan.
Congratulations, both Tom and Tony. As the week goes on, we will probably have more of these shirts to give away. So please listen in. It's our last week in afternoons. Still doing mornings, 10 to noon. And then an hour on the Slipstream. Am I getting that right? The Slipstream? What do they call it?
On the stream.
On the stream.
WGNplus.com. We'll tell you tomorrow how you can find it. And that's where we should give the t-shirts away. We should have people, you know, if you listen to us and call in.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm confused about, because there's going to be a different phone number.
Oh, there is.
I will not give you that number.
Oh, all right. That's like a secret code. Only one person can have it number?
Right.
All right. I'm not privy to it. All right. So, keep listening in for the rest of the week and then stop listening.
No, stop
No, don't
it.
Say that. Who said that? I wouldn't say that. All right. This is upsetting. Oh, why would somebody sue Papa John's, Wendy? Why would somebody sue Papa John's? They make delicious sub sandwiches, and now somebody's suing them because they say that Papa John's is sending them too many texts.
All right. Well, that would cause alarm for me. But you can always... you can always like to message stop if you want to get off their text list, because obviously they signed up with these people to get discounts that were going on. So all you have to do is text back stop and you'll be taken off the text list.
All right. Now you tell me this, because I honestly don't know the answer to this, but I've heard people in the tech world say this, but I don't know if it's true or not. They say you should never respond to that, because what that does is it tells them that they've got a live wire, that you're a legitimate web address, and if you tell them, please don't send me anymore, they send you more, because then they know you're a real person. Is that true?
I don't know that I believe that, because are you talking emails or texts or both?
With emails, and I don't know about texts, but I know with emails they say anytime you're given that option, don't respond to it, because you're going to get more instead of less.
There have been several emails that I have received, because I have like 89,000 or something on my phone.
Yeah.
I got to clean out my mailbox. I'm a hoarder of emails.
You are a hoarder of emails.
You saw what? One from 1972? Is that what you were going to say?
No, I don't remember. Oh, okay. It was a long time ago.
Well, so a lot of times if you're going to a website where you want to look around, let me think, Wayfair, you can get furniture there and household items. You can't just tool around on their website. You have to register, and that bugs me. So I register, which means I get a ton of emails from Wayfair, and if you click unsubscribe at the bottom, I've stopped getting them. So it did work.
Oh, it worked. All right.
And with texting, a lot of times Bed Bath & Beyond will have a 20% off coupon, and when you're in the store, you text it, you text, you know, savings to this number. I do it. I get the coupon. I use it, and then I forget about it, so a month later, I get the updates, like Bed Bath & Beyond is having a huge sale.
Right.
If you want to not get these texts anymore, text stop to this number, and I do, and I don't get them anymore. So to me, it works.
Do you feel you've ever been bombarded with texts from any company? Have you ever just had too many that you go, I can't take this anymore? I can't believe I signed up for this.
No.
Never, right? There is a sub place near us that I go to from time to time, and every Tuesdays they run a special where you get double points. And I'm reminded of that every Tuesday morning. They say, don't forget, today's double points day.
You get a text.
Yeah.
You can opt out of that, you know.
But that's what I'm saying is I'm always afraid. I'm reluctant to, because I don't know if that's their way of saying, well, now we know you're there. You're really going to get a lot of texts. And I've signed up. There's been a couple places that when I make a purchase at the store, they ask me for my cell phone number or my email address. And then I say, are you guys going to send me texts all the time or emails? And they say no. And then I go, well, then why do you need it? And that stops them in their tracks.
And they ask you for it. You don't have to give it.
No, I don't give it. I give them yours. Sometimes I give them yours.
Like, I even notice. I have 89,000 email. I got to just look.
89,000. Have you ever deleted a single email?
Yeah.
Ever? Yeah?
88,000, sorry.
No. Everyone has
88,066.
Wow.
I'll go through it sometime.
Wow.
That's a pain.
In most cases, it says here, lawsuits make for very dry reading, but Jonathan Anozzi versus Papa John's International is not a boring case. How can it be when the guy sued a pizza company simply for texting him too much? According to the document, Jonathan Anozzi claims that Papa John started texting him in March, reports CNN.
The actual Papa John or the company?
It's the company. It's okay. Not actual Papa John. That'd be weird. What are you wearing?
What are you wearing?
Papa John. Wouldn't that be weird? Then you got a lawsuit.
That'd make me laugh, though.
The CEO of Papa John's wants to know what I'm wearing a dozen times a day.
Pizza sauce?
Right. Right. It's unclear, it says here, just how many texts there were total. Anozzi claims that this was in violation of the Telephone Consumer Protection Act.
There is no such thing.
I think there is.
Yeah, but I mean, come on, you get on the do not call list and they do call you more.
Right.
You know how many cruises I've won?
Have you won a lot of cruises?
Yeah.
Anozzi says that Papa John's should pay him $500 for each single text.
Okay.
That seems realistic.
First of all, you're on a bad plan if that's what they're charging you per text.
$500 per.
That's ridiculous.
One of the sample texts reads, it says it's from Papa John's, and then it says, here's Papa John's this deal. You'll get two large pizzas and up to five toppings or specialties. I don't know what that means.
Breadsticks or whatever.
Oh, okay. The extras that come along with it. All for just $9.99 each, and then it gives you a number to send in as your code. But then it says at the end, reply stop to cancel. Now, if you're the lawyers for Papa John's, don't you say, it says right at the end of every text we sent this guy, reply stop to cancel.
But did Anozzi hit stop and send?
And it didn't seem like he did. Oh, wait a second. Hold on. He did. Anozzi said he texted back stop many times, but Papa John's just kept on trying to lure him in with its deals on large pies.
All right. First of all, have the ability to say no.
Right.
They're luring me.
Don't be so easily influenced, John Anozzi. Know when to say no.
And you know what? Honestly, if you hit stop and it doesn't work, just block the number. You'll never get a text from them again. This case should be thrown out. Next.
You're done with this guy. It says here, John's favorite. Now, it doesn't say if that means John Anozzi or Papa John's, but it says John's favorite says, that's pepperoni sausage, a six cheese blend, and Italian seasoning, maybe the works. It includes pepperoni, Canadian bacon, and spicy Italian sausage. green peppers, mushrooms, and black olives. I don't know why that's in there.
That's John's favorite.
I guess it is John's favorite.
Maybe he's ordered it before, and it saves a favorite.
Oh, maybe. But in a text, aren't you allowed? Oh, no, I guess text can be unlimited. What's the one where you're only allowed
Twitter.
A certain? It's Twitter, only a certain amount of characters. Defendant's calls directly and substantially interfered with the plaintiff's right to peacefully enjoy the service that the plaintiff paid for and caused the plaintiff to suffer a significant amount of anxiety, frustration, and annoyance.
You give me that every day. I'm not suing you.
Yet. Could you fairly say that a number of texts about delicious pizza toppings were giving you anxiety, frustration, annoyance? Yes.
And anxiety and frustration if you can't make it stop and you texted stop to them. I see that. But still, 500 a text?
That's
it
frivolous.
Ain't happening.
That's frivolous.
Their pizzas are so cheap anyway.
Right.
They should give you a pizza for every text that they sent you.
Papa John's website says that it sends up to 6 messages a month, and that's only if you sign up for its service.
And that's not that many.
That's 1.5 a week. That's nothing.
I don't understand the half text, though. I have to wait for the other half to come through.
Right. I know there's a special. I just don't know what it is. Other companies, it says here, have also been sued for robo-texting as well, and Facebook is one of them. I get texts from a very small sampling of businesses, never more than 1 a week. And when I see it, I go, oh, that's interesting. And that's the end of it. I don't feel the need to go in. I don't feel frustrated. I don't feel annoyed. I don't feel anxiety ridden.
No. How did you figure it out to get texts to tell you how many points you have at the submarine shop?
Because
that's really, you're tech savvy now.
To be fair, I have to ask them when I'm in. I don't go in every week, but I go in every 2 or 3, and I go, do I get a free sub yet? And then they say to me, no, at the rate you're going, you have to wait until Christmas. And then I go, okay. And then I come back in a few weeks. It's always an awkward exchange.
To be you, you should wear a GoPro camera when you're not here.
Well,
and
they
just
won't even tell me like what the target number is. They just tell me, like, and sometimes it's at Christmas. And they go, no, it won't be till Christmas. And then I go, okay, but it is Christmas.
That seems like a lot of subs to get a free one.
I know.
Is it worth it?
Not necessarily. No. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Ro and Anna have. That's coming up in just a moment. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, Ro and Anna are here. Hi, guys.
Hey, guys. Happy Monday.
Hello, people.
Right back at you. Mm-hmm.
Happy Casimir Pulaski Day to
thank
both
you very
of you.
Much.
Oh,
thank you.
You.
I'm celebrating quietly at home with friends and family.
Do you guys open the gifts on the air? Wendy and I did ours on air today.
Oh, in the morning.
Yeah.
First thing in the morning.
First thing. Yeah. It's more fun.
We rushed down to the tree.
Yeah.
The Casimir Pulaski tree.
Yes.
And we, Casimir Pulaski is a very important American historical figure. And,
sure is.
And I don't mean to make light of it.
No.
As far as you know.
No.
All right. But it is an interesting thing because they get it off. Like, that's one of those things where, that's one of those with your Chicago public school student.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, hey! Bonus time.
Right.
Nobody else is taking
you
that.
Tell
day.
All your friends that aren't in the CPS system. You're getting the day off.
So other cities do not, their schools do not get this day off.
No.
It's just Chicago.
It really
nice.
Is. Nice. Just the Chicago.
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's what it, well, yeah, that makes when you think about it, WGN Chicago, when you think about it, it makes complete sense in Chicago, right? I mean,
yeah.
that's a big deal.
Yeah.
So, all right, now coming up on the program, you might ask.
What's coming up on today's show?
Former Congressman Mike Rogers, who was important in writing some of the stuff for the Trump administration going in, doing some evaluation of security issues and international security issues, former FBI guy, big time deal. He'll be joining us to talk about the wiretap.
Tap, tap, tapping on my window.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I'm going to just start spelling tap with 2 P's too, because it's very
yep.
That's
how we do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk to him about that. Also, Evan McMullen, who was the guy from Utah who ran against Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And he was the Independent Party guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be joining us also to talk about this and also about the travel ban, the rewritten travel ban, which seems like it's going to pass muster and it's going to move through and all that. Mm-hmm. But the president didn't show up at that press conference today.
Right. What was with that?
About
Why
that.
Wasn't
and
he there?
Only sent a picture out of him signing the deal, not didn't allow press in. He does not. They are around the wagon train is circling around him, including himself, because they don't want to come out and have to answer questions about this. The president could if he truly believes this, if he's been briefed and he has any intel that is government generated intelligence about this wiretapping, then he can release it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the problem, is that that question would be asked of he or his surrogates at this point. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, it was even screamed at during the press conference with the Secretary of State and Attorney General and the Homeland Security directors today. And yet no one wants to answer that question, because I think, like the rest, with the exception of people who just love it when he does this, and whatever he does, they just love, and whether they believe it or not, they don't even care. It's just kind of fun. I think everybody's scratching their head. Mm-hmm. Right. And they're like, what is he talking about?
Well, surrogates are saying that he has access to other information that, you know, regular citizens wouldn't have.
Uh-huh. But that's true. He does.
And they stop short of showing anything.
And then what he could do is show that to people and go, see, I told you, this is it right here.
A caller asked earlier if you're Barack Obama, could you sue Donald Trump for defamation of character? You cannot.
No.
Because why?
Because there's the libel laws are, in terms of proving when you have a public figure, presidents, politicians by large cannot get sued or sue, but cannot sue in a situation like that, because Barack Obama was president of the United States. If you were a private citizen, you could sue.
Yeah.
But as a public figure, you can't.
That level of public figure, when you're a politician,
it's hard.
You could say anything about a politician. You could go out and say that Barack Obama killed Michelle last night, and you couldn't get sued for it.
So. Well, stay tuned to his Twitter feed. You
That's
just
true.
Gave him an idea.
Hey, wait a second. I never thought about that. Oh, man.
Have fun with this all.
Thanks, guys.
I'm near having my brain explode.
Oh,
right
it doesn't
now.
Help the weekend, does it, when all this stuff happens? It sort of doesn't keep a calm mode.
No. Bill, plug in the wiretap on Rose's microphone.
It's on.
He's going to use this one when we're done.